space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North Carolina.
California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Is brought to you by Toyota's hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. Leave your mark. Toyota, let's go places. It's 2015. Hollywood prophecy says that we should have flying cars by now. And we don't have flying cars. So how about hydrogen cars? Hey, everybody. Thanks for watching DNews today. I'm Trace. Fueling your car with hydrogen is weird. Hydrogen, number one on the periodic table. It's a powerful combustible element. It blew up the Hindenburg. But it's also part of water and carbohydrates and so many other things in nature. The thing is, hydrogen, it's a lot of things. And it's in a lot of things because it's a super simple element. One proton, one electron. And it makes up 75% of all the mass in the universe. Yeah, 3/4 of everything is hydrogen. Hydrogen is used for food processing, petroleum refining, and in a variety of industrial applications. The U.S. already creates more than 9 million metric tons of hydrogen annually. So I say again, fueling your car with hydrogen is kind of weird. But it's actually not that weird. You've probably heard of hydrogen fuel cells. They've been around for a while. They were first invented in 1839. They use oxygen and hydrogen to power a car with no moving parts and only emit clean water vapor and heat when burned. And according to many car companies, 2015 might be the year the rubber meets the road for hydrogen as a fuel. When you think of creating hydrogen, you probably think of this. But 95% of America's hydrogen is actually produced using natural gas steam reformation. Factories use high temperatures and pressures to break the natural gas into hydrogen, yay, and carbon oxides, boo. You can also make hydrogen using electrolysis, essentially running electricity through water to split the hydrogen from the oxygen. These are both great things, but something has to generate the electricity for that electrolysis, and in the US that's usually coal power. But if we use wind or solar, then we'd be onto something, right? Once it's made, hydrogen has to then be cooled and stored, which uses more fossil fuel energy. And then you have to ship it to pumping stations using trucks and trains, so you get it. The hydrogen is great, but we kind of suck at making it and moving it around. For now, we're stuck making hydrogen using fossil fuels, which might not be ideal, but that could all change once hydrogen vehicles get on the roads. Why buy a hydrogen car if there's nowhere to fill it up, right? The government and private companies are working to fix that right now. They are partnering to get fuel stations out there. California has a goal in place to have more than 15% of all cars in the state be zero-emission vehicles by 2025. And to hit that goal, they've pledged $200 million to build 100 more fueling stations for hydrogen before 2025. There are already 10, though I don't imagine they're very busy since there aren't too many hydrogen cars around, but that should change soon too. Because in tandem with this momentum, a bunch of auto companies have pledged to release hydrogen fuel cell cars this year. And with 100 more stations coming, filling up those cars with hydrogen fuel should be a cinch. According to research from the University of California, Davis, those 100 stations should be able to make fuel cell vehicles cost competitive with gasoline. It's incredible. We'd like to take a second and give a shout out to Toyota for supporting DNews. They were at CES this week and they released their patents to the public for new fuel cell technology and revealed their fuel cell car to the world. It's called the Mirai. They're hoping these royalty-free patents will spurn a hydrogen fuel-based future and spent the last decade reducing the cost of fuel cell production 95%. So this is a pretty awesome deal. Have you ever seen a hydrogen fuel station? Would you want a hydrogen car if you could get one? Let us know in the comments. And also subscribe to DNews so you can get more of these videos every single day of the week. Thanks for watching. This episode of DNews is brought to you by Toyota's hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. Leave your mark. Toyota.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 911. Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you can have access to not one, but three separate chat rooms. Yeah. So I played that little podcast there about hydrogen technology. And I posted a bunch of videos over there in the superchat.html in chat room of different hydrogen, cars running off of hydrogen technology. Let me scroll up here. See what the heck it is that I was looking at. Oh, yeah, okay, well, anyway. So, basically, there's a lot of videos out there that show you how to separate using the electrolysis process hydrogen and oxygen and how combustible it is. And so with that said, I don't know what the heck is going on here. Modern technology, you gotta love it. So with that said, there's a like I said, there's a bunch of different videos out there of people talking about running your cars on water. And then I stumbled into a deal where the Mythbusters out there on their disinformation campaign. You know, I used to really like the Mythbusters. I thought they were pretty meticulous in what they did. But after watching the Mythbusters, doggone, I can't even say that. Mythbusters, disinformation people. After watching them long enough and knowing certain things and then watching them basically come out there, anything that has to do with free energy, they like to want to debunk it. They want to try to come out there and make it as if that it's not plausible for you to run a car off of hydrogen, which in the same episode they proved that you can run a car off of hydrogen with no modifications just by pumping hydrogen down into the carburetor. They was actually able to get it to run. And so basically they're trying to make it out like, well, you know, all these people out here talking about getting better gas mileage and running your car off of hydrogen or water is what they basically said. Running your car off of water is ridiculous. It's, now they just basically want to make everybody look stupid who's talking about it. You know, if these guys are like really seriously into science and stuff, and the science community out there in general, even the automotive industry, because even Motor Trend jumped on the bandwagon of the Mythbusters. And not only did they not do it right, but they misrepresented a lot of portions of running your car off water. And so the average Joe out there who's not really into science or anything like that, you know, or really isn't very knowledgeable in it, would look at that and you're like, oh yeah, that's just another one of those crazy alternative energy guys out there, free energy idiots, whatever, and they don't think it's possible. But the sheer ridiculousness of it all is mind-boggling to me. Because basic science talks about hydrogen is two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. And so you know the two separated, one is a highly implosive and one is an explosive gas. Both will burn. Crazy as it sounds, when you burn water, you get water out the other side. But see, they're basically trying to make it out sound like people's talking about, well, you can just put water in your gas tank and run your car because of its weight. That's not even what anybody in the HHO communities even talked about. You know, there's a lot of people out there in the HHO community, and you know, there's companies like Toyota that are actually building hydrogen cars, and there's actually fuel stations out there that produce hydrogen for said cars. Supposedly, according to that last podcast, there's only like 10 hydrogen stations in the world where, you know, you get very few hydrogen cars. Nonetheless, at some point in time, they'll be running cars on hydrogen. It's just, in the meantime, it's frustrating because of the way that the auto industry and even people like the Mythbusters, can't even say that name right. I used to have respect for them, and now I just despise them all to heck because I've watched them do a few alternative energy things that they just massacre them. They just try to make everybody feel like they're stupid and that these technologies aren't even remotely possible. You know, you can burn water. It's been done. Using radio frequencies, separating it, using heat and pressure. Industry uses heat and pressure to separate the water molecule into its separate hydrogen and oxygen. And so, the more I see videos like this, the one guy was saying, oh, you need 45,000 gallons of hydrogen, and you'd have to haul this big tank. That was the Motor Trend guy. He said you'd have to haul this big tanker behind you with 45,000 gallons of hydrogen. man, I can understand why people in the HHO community would not be very happy to hear that. Especially when a lot of them's running little engines off of hydrogen technology. And, you know, that, like, as far as the separating the hydrogen and oxygen, sometimes folks will put, like, baking soda or salt or something like that in there to make the water more conductive so that the electrolysis process will produce more hydrogen on demand. And then there's a video link that I posted down there where a man actually looks like maybe a Corvette that he's running. It could be one of the older Camaros, I'm not sure. Can't remember now. But anyway, he's got a couple tanks in there, and he's got a different process by which he gets the hydrogen to run his car. And he said those tanks would run up to about 400 miles. So that's pretty impressive technology. Stan Myers was running around in a dune buggy back in the 70s using hydrogen technology. And once again, he was doing it a different way, with specialized injectors and certain radio frequencies to separate the hydrogen and oxygen. And I even looked up the reason why you don't want to throw water on an electrical fire. Isn't because necessarily you're worried about getting an electrical shock, because for the most part the water's not conductive enough to, you know, for, like, let's say the fireman, he sprays the water on the electrical fire, and the electricity follows the water and shocks the crud out of him. Well, the water's not that conductive unless it's got a bunch of impurities in it. So, you know, that's not the main reason why that they don't spray water on electrical fire. You don't spray water on electrical fire because the voltage is high enough and there's an arc going on. Once the water hits the hot materials and flashes the steam and breaks it down farther, and then the high voltage heats it up yet even more, and then eventually you separate the hydrogen and oxygen and you end up with a hydrogen explosion. And when I say this, it sounds like it's taking a long time to occur, but it's not. It's really happening fast. And there are a few videos out there where firefighters made the mistake of actually spraying water onto a power line that was on fire, and looked like the fire was about to go out, and then all of a sudden you hear this big boom and everything's back blazing again, worse than it was before. It's because they literally created the situation for a hydrogen explosion. So, in the one podcast, the man's talking about how hydrogen is, like, everywhere. You know, it's in the sun, it's all over the universe, and in just about everything, there's hydrogen molecules everywhere. So there's, like, fuel all the way around you, everywhere. Hydrogen, oxygen, and the only reason why I think that our atmosphere doesn't blow up under certain circumstances is because there's nitrogen in the air as well. And since nitrogen is a larger molecule, sort of like CO2, that it displaces the hydrogen and oxygen far enough to a distance where, you know, the two can't meet. It basically snuffs out the fire before it gets a chance to even get started. So you got to have oxygen, hydrogen, and a fuel source. I just got distracted. said Stephen Gibbs says, "Good morning, Shaziz. I hate Mythbusters. They are the gatekeepers for the establishment. With watch the hatchet job they done on Bedini SSG. But the one that really makes me laugh was the one where they try to debunk Tesla's clockwork device he used to rock steel framework of a skyscraper being built. They replicated the magnetic piston he used to attached it to the bridge and had to evacuate the bridge because rather than debunk it, they proved it." Cool, I gotta find that one. See, what he's talking about right there is Tesla literally built a device that created an earthquake, and it did it in one of the basic physics, you know, if you find the resonant frequency of something, if you like a tapping on it or whatever, it's the equivalence of the opera singer raising their voice up to the right tone and vibrating that glass, and one pitch over that, well, the glass will shatter. You know, you find everything has its own resonant frequency. So anyway, I'm going to have to find that one. Thanks, Stephen. Kind of tired, so I wasn't able to read it out very good. Anyway, yeah. So Mythbusters, they used to have my respect, but they lost my respect some time ago. And now that I heard this story here about that with Stephen, that's yet another nail in the coffin of the whole Mythbusters video, whatever. And then when Motor Trend jumped onto the bandwagon and started trying to make everybody talk about look stupid for talking about using water for fuel, nobody said you can put water directly into the average engine like it is now. It's not designed to run like that. However, I'm saying that you could literally design an engine to run on pure distilled water. And it's not beyond the realms of science. And I would love to have the Mythbusters come out there and try to disprove everything I'm saying. I'd put me on the show. It'd probably end up with a fist fight, because me and the Mythbusters are probably getting to a knockdown drag out. That sounds crazy, because old Shaziz is a peaceful guy, but when it comes to science, I don't call it mad science for nothing. These turkeys are out there basically hindering society by out there telling everybody, oh, well, this ain't even possible. So they're pretty much sold out. That's my personal opinion on the deal. We know how powerful hydrogen technology is. And if there's companies out there like Toyota that's actually making hydrogen cars and hydrogen hybrids and stuff like that, so the technology's already proven. It's just these folks want to drag their feet or try to make you look stupid, so you ain't going to try to, you know, run no hydrogen cells or whatever. You got to understand the science of hydrogen technology before you start running your car on it. Your average, like your automobile, it's not designed to run on certain things like that. But they proved right there in the video that they were trying to use to debunk that hydrogen technology was stupid, was they had a tank of hydrogen, they put it right down into the carburetor and ran the car. So, what's the point in all that? They was trying to say that, well, you just can't get enough hydrogen and whatever. The one guy from the Motor Trend, he says you got to have 45,000 gallons to match a fuel tank of hydrogen. You got to have 45,000 gallons of hydrogen. So he's trying to say you'd have to drag a big giant tank of hydrogen behind you in order to run your car for the equivalence of one fuel tank of gasoline, which is ridiculous. Now, you got the water in a safe, it's in its safe mode while it's water. You could have that in a doggone tank and then separate it on demand. It's been done before. It's just that you just can't get mainstream media or mainstream business to entertain the idea because of obvious reasons. You think that they mainstream news and all that, they don't have people in the oil industry and the tire industry and the plastics industry or auto industry that aren't connected with oil companies? They make their money that way, you know? And so by advertising for these companies, they can literally you know, make a lot of money. And if you're going to start saying you can run your car on water and then people figure out how exactly to do this and then they do it, well, that gets the fuel industry right in the wallet. And gets the auto industry in the wallet, because now the auto industry has to retrofit cars to start running off of whatever fuel the people are wanting to run it off of. The power is actually in the people's hands if the people decide they want to take it. If you want your cars to run on clean, renewable energy, what better fuel can you get than something that the earth is covered in? And so if you ever want to see technology advance, it's going to be from the ground up, because these knuckleheads have already proven that they're disinforming agents. Doggone Mythbusters, that's a shame, because I love that show. They did a lot of cool stuff on it. But when they started debunking stuff like, trying to debunk stuff like hydrogen technology, it's ridiculous. Because on one hand, you know, all these folks out there in Hollywood and the government, they're always saying, well, you know, we got to reduce our carbon emissions, and you don't get no carbon emissions with hydrogen technology. And so, if you're really serious about, like, saving the planet and all that kind of stuff, and this technology is already available, and why I'm still talking about the internal combustion engine is because it's a simpler and cheaper process to modify existing vehicles to be able to run on this technology than it is to try to build custom generators that will work in a different fashion. There's tons of technology out there. You don't even have to burn hydrogen in order to get electricity from it. You can use the separation and recombination of hydrogen to literally produce electricity. So it's not technology that can't be achieved. It's just financially plausible financially plausible to do it retrofitting existing equipment. Now, ain't nobody in this world ever going to tell me that it's not possible to build an engine that will run directly off of distilled water with absolutely no additives to that water. And the reason being is because of the basic science of how water molecules are put together. You got two hydrogen atoms connected to one oxygen atom. And so, maybe I'm not even saying that right. Is it a molecule or is it whatever? It doesn't matter. It's made up of hydrogen and oxygen, which both of them, you know, are flammable. Both one's implosive and one's explosive. So, water is fuel. You can get water right out of the air. You can get hydrogen out of all kinds of stuff out there. And so, there's plenty of fuel to go around. I mean, for Pete's sake, they say the sun is made up of a lot of hydrogen. The sun itself is burning. It's been burning, according to science, for 4 to 5 billion years, according to science. But I'm not trusting science very much anymore. Mainstream science is pretty much letting people down. When you're under the thumb of the power company or the fuel industry out there, because if you don't pay your light bill, they're going to shut you off. And when they shut you off, and if you already got an infrastructure in your house, such as refrigerators and heating and cooling that are relying on electricity, then they're pretty much causing you problems, serious problems. How long can your freezer go without no doggone electricity? If you got food in there, if you stored up enough food for a while, and your refrigerator goes down, and all this food needs to be cooled in order to stay fresh, and then suddenly the power company decides you didn't pay your bill in time, they want to shut you off. I've been down that road before. Been down that road of having to worry about keeping my family comfortable and keeping their food fresh. And the power company didn't care. Matter of fact, their employees were rude to me and disrespectful because, you know, hey, pay your light bill and we'll turn you back on. It wasn't just the fact that they wanted me to pay a light bill, they wanted me to pay a huge deposit as well. So, here we got the doggone technology available to us to literally build the perfect engines, the perfect generating systems. Which, from what I understand, is what they wanted. Clean, renewable, alternative energy. It's what they said they wanted. And when you hand it to them on a silver platter, Or at least show them that, look, you guys are hollering for something that already exists and you're just not implementing it. That's why I get upset. You know, as a mad science guy who's been in the science geek since I was a kid, you know, I can't remember everything that there is to remember as far as science goes, but I could always look it back up if I had a question about something. But what I do know is that in hydrogen technology, they've been using all types of different processes to separate the hydrogen and oxygen. You know, and heat and pressure, you know, we've run steam engines for years. Way back in the prior to the 1800s and all the way up through the 1900s in the modern day time, there were steam engines and steam boilers running around. And, you know, there's fire safety videos and stuff out there. It shows you about electrical fires. And, you know, if you understand the dangers of water and electricity, then you should be able to understand the benefits. If you don't want to spray water on an electrical fire because you could literally have a hydrogen explosion, then that means that if you took that and focused it into right piece of equipment, you could literally get your explosion on demand, which is the internal combustion engine. Stephen Gibbs says, can't find the video. It seems to be replaced by another bridge episode, break step myth. But the one I'm referring to was Earthquake Machine, August 30th, 2006, episode 60. Adam and Jamie take one of the greatest scientists, inventors, and myth creator legends of all times, Nikola Tesla, and his earthquake machine. Tori and Carl investigate a legal lava lamp. Or lethal lava lamp. Why did I say legal? Anyway, that happens when you get tired. But nonetheless, these guys are out there supposed to be like on the side of truth, man. And what do? They go try to debunk amazing technology and one of the best inventors out there that we've ever had. Now, they would say, well, we weren't trying to debunk Tesla, you know. That's the way to mince words. But if the technology was good back then, and it should be good now, if the science is true back then it should be true now, and we have the knowledge of how to literally separate hydrogen and oxygen using pressure and heat, well, think about this for a second. Inside the internal combustion engine, it relies on pressure and heat. If you don't have no compression, then your engine won't run right. Or at all, period. You won't get enough pressure to smash all the molecules tightly enough to create an explosion when you want it. Or as in a diesel engine, just a burn. So there is no reason whatsoever why you literally could not redesign the internal combustion engine using all the technology available out there. Everything from an air compressor to a diesel engine to a gasoline engine to literally be designed specifically for burning water directly. Without any kind of additives to that water. If it's true that water is hydrogen and oxygen, then all you have to be able to do is separate it. We already know that steam power is strong enough to push down a piston. We already know that steam power is already powerful enough to turn turbines. It's proven technology, proven science. So with that said, you start off running this engine like a air compressor. You build up heat inside that engine. Once you inject tiny amounts of water into that cylinder at those high temperatures, then the moment that water hits those hot pistons and cylinder walls inside there, It will begin an expansion rate of about 1,600 times its mass of what you put inside there. So it would literally have to be measured out and mathematically figured out to only put in exactly what it takes to push that piston down. Because too much would have the wrong effect. Water can put out fires. Even though water is made up of one explosive, one implosive gas, even though the two combined, if separated, would be dangerous under certain circumstances, the two can be used because water and hydrogen connected to each other is water, and water has a cooling effect. And so when you want to try to start a fire, you got to get something up past its kindling temperature in order to be able to get it to ignite. Why does it keep burning? Is because it still has oxygen around it, and the kindling temperature of the fire itself is raising the kindling temperature of the material, which in turn allows it to continue to burn. So if you reach the kindling temperature of hydrogen and oxygen, then you're able to burn it. It's that simple. Let's see. Nikola Tesla invented a machine that, when attached to an object and turned to vibrate at certain frequencies, can cause an earthquake-like effect on the object it is attached to. And it says busted. The Mythbusters built several vile variations of Tesla's pneumatic earthquake machine using modified jackhammers as well as specially designed computer-controlled electromagnetic linear actuators made by Grant, small-scale tested in metal bars, were mixed with the modified tools performing poorly, while the more finely tunable actuator produced significant vibrations in the bar. A scale test with the model of Tesla's lab and miniature motor failed to produce any noticeable results. Finally, a large-scale test using an actuator bridge was attempted. The Mythbusters attached a resonator to the side of the large truss of the bridge to see whether the entire bridge would be shaken. While the resonator did match the bridge's frequency and produced a vibration noticeable 100 feet away, it was not strong enough to be considered an earthquake. With the combination of lack of spectacular results and Tesla's tendency to exaggerate his accomplishments at the time of the publication, the Mythbusters declared the myth busted. That's why I don't like the Mythbusters. Because they're idiots. You can tell them I said that. Go to Hollywood, find the Mythbusters, and tell them that OSHA says that they're idiots. See, if you do a job and you don't do the job completely, you do it halfway, and you don't get the results that somebody told you would if you did it the same way that they did it, then you're not being honest in your investigation. There was a video that Mark Brash over there at Zero Fossil Fuel did. He did a live stream of replicating Keshi's reactor out there. And he did it by their specs, by what they said, and got the results that he believed he was going to get at the end of it because of his understanding of electricity and mechanics and so on and so forth and science. But he did it. He did an honest replication of it and came up with those results. Now see, if the Mythbusters could do an honest replication of things and come up with results, I'd have a little bit more respect for them. But when you're watching them basically make a joke out of hydrogen technology about running your car on water, trying to make it sound like somebody's talking about you just dump water down in your carburetor and drive it, Well, that's just pure ridiculousness. So, that's why I don't have no respect for them. So anyway, if you jump over there to the superchat.html at www.shazizradio.com, I posted some videos over there you can take a look at. I didn't post the original to Mythbusters because I don't want to give the Mythbusters any more views. I don't want to promote them. I posted a debunking video of it. Of why that they weren't fair about their the way that they explained it. There's been a lot of subjects out there that the Mythbusters did that to. And it's really frustrating because, like I said, on one hand, the mainstream media and the governments of the world talk about how we got to get find clean renewable energies to find energy independence so that there ain't no wars over fossil fuels, which is a misnomer. Fossil fuels is ridiculousness. And for all those folks out there thinking that this is going to be something to be over with, once we run out of what they call fossil fuels, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but there is absolutely no way under the sun in your lifetime or my lifetime or the next billion lifetimes of anybody out there that you're ever going to see the end of what they call fossil fuel. It's not possible. As long as the Earth is doing what the Earth does, as long as we are carbon-based organisms that are going to eventually die and go back into the system, as long as there is plant life and anything in this world is carbon-based that ends up back into the system, as long as the Earth keeps doing what the Earth's been doing for what they say 4 to 5 billion years, you ain't going to run out of oil. You ain't going to run out of natural gas. Every material that was ever on this planet is still on this planet. And it's just like the whole water issue whenever I was trying to tell everybody, if you're standing next to the ocean and you're dying of thirst, it's because you didn't pay attention in science class. And they're like, well, that's fresh water, stupid. Really? Okay, well, let's see. Go over there to Dubai and ask them about fresh water and salt water. They built huge desalination plants, and they're able to pump this water up, not only turn it into fresh water, but pump it all the way to the top of the skyscrapers that they built on the land that they built that they're standing on. Using all the materials around them, they literally built the land that they're standing on. And the skyscrapers are on. And they don't seem to be dying of thirst. So they paid attention in science. They also paid attention in physics. So, for all those folks out there who think you're going to run out of oil or water, you need to go back to science class. You're making yourself look foolish. Because anybody who really paid attention in science, if science is correct and water is made out of 2 parts hydrogen and 1 part oxygen, then you got the perfect fuel right there. And you can even use the water itself in order to cool the engine down so that you don't burn it up. That's why I just don't get it. You see people out there who will call people everything under the sun, filthy names and smart mouth like they think they're smart and they don't understand the basic science of it. If you say, yeah, there's free energy and they come out, well, there ain't no such thing as free energy. And even some people who classify themselves as to be fairly intelligent, highly educated, school educated, or whatever, will sit there and say the same thing. Make themselves look ridiculous. Make themselves look foolish trying to convince somebody who paid attention in science that there's no such thing as free energy. If hydrogen's all around us, and nitrogen's all around us, and oxygen's all around us, and the wind is still blowing, and the sun's still shining, and the water's still flowing, and the Earth is still spinning, or not, depending on whichever view you're at. Nonetheless, nature has provided more energy than you will ever use in a trillion, 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 and beyond to infinity and beyond lifetimes. Now, if you take the, good care of nature and you get along with nature, you'll keep all your animals alive and you'll keep everything fresh and clean, and you work in harmony with nature, everything will work out just fine. When folks sit out there and they complain about cars producing carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide and it's actually causing the planet to heat up, and then they talk about cows burping and farting causing methane to make the planet hot, they didn't pay attention in science class. And the ones who really did pay attention in science class but sold their soul to the devil in order to try to get some extra grant money from the government based off of a lie, well, shame on them. Because after sitting out there stealing from the stupid people, literally, it's theft. It is literally stealing from somebody when you know that what you're spewing out in order to fear-monger them is not true. The planet is not heating up due to man-made emissions. It's not. Period. And I don't care who wants to debate it. Bring them to the table. Put them on the microphone. They won't step up to the doggone microphone because they don't have an argument to back up the lie. And then when you do get them boxed into a corner, they always resort to the same exact thing. The mockingbird effect, where they repeat what they heard on TV. They repeat what the mainstream media's done said, the government said, and all this kind of mainstream scientist guys. And when that doesn't work, then they resort to personal attacks and sometimes even violence. So, that's why I call it mad science. We got all the technology to literally build the perfect world to ensure that everybody out here has food and water and shelter and can even enjoy the luxuries of an automobile going to and fro, so you don't have to walk over to the next state over there or farther to go visit relatives or whatever. Some people want to live in Florida. I don't want to live in Florida. It's a nice place to visit, but I don't want to live down there. But if I decide I want to go there, I don't want to have to walk. And I don't want to go to the airport, because if you go to the airport, you're going to get groped because they want to try to see if you're a terrorist or carrying a weapon or something like that, even though they'd allow the terrorist to come through anyway, because they don't want the terrorist being offended because they feel like they're picked out of the crowd because of the way they look. It's pure ridiculousness that we have to contend with in this world. That's why I get frustrated. Well, I don't understand why it is that, you know, we even have to have this conversation. But I'm going to use my knowledge to create a solution, and I'm building an internal combustion engine that will run directly off of water. Using everything from compressor technology to how air conditioners work, how diesel engines work, how gasoline engines work, and how hydrogen technology works, putting all those pieces of the puzzle in and using the energy the way that I want it to, guiding the temperatures where I want the temperatures to go, and basically building a smart, efficient, running internal combustion engine. Not like the turkeys that you have. Look, you might have a really nice car. It might be a hot rod. Your hot rod might even actually be able to outrun my car that I got right now. But your car is an inefficient pile of junk. Period. It wasn't designed properly. It was designed to run off of gasoline. And it doesn't even do that efficiently. And even once you've souped it up and did all your tweaks to it and got it to run better than the other guys and even have a little bit more horsepower than the other guys and be able to get that thing down the doggone road, it's still a turkey. You know? And when you think you know everything that there is to know about mechanics, that you're not even willing to entertain a change to building something better. You know, if this mentality would have been back during Henry Ford's time, and Henry Ford actually had a quote about something, I can't say it verbatim, but essentially went by, if you think it's not possible, then it isn't possible. Something to that effect, or if you think you can't do it, you won't be able to do it. Something to that effect. I wish I could remember the exact quote. But if you convince yourself that it's not possible, then it ain't possible. If you don't even try, you can't succeed. If he would have had that mentality back in them days, and everyone else after that would have had the mentality, we'd still be driving around on his motors. And the original one. Or we would have gave up on them and walked away. But now you went from a normal, the very first motor all the way up to fuel injection and, you know, turbo diesels and so much more. There's even engines out there made out of plastic. You don't hear a lot about that. You know, if you can regulate temperatures where you want them and you can make an engine out of plastic with modern day technology, 3D printing technology, you could literally print an internal combustion engine that would run directly off of water. Right there. Let's see, somebody over in the mad science room. It's Raymond. Let's add him to the call. Let's make a call. Call Raymond. Hello, you're live on the air. Don't drop the F-bomb.
I'll do my best. How you doing, Joe?
Pretty good. Well, I posted a lot of videos over here in the chat room at superchat.html talking about hydrogen technology, and one video was actually talking about questioning whether hydrogen cars would explode, and it shows it. The myth of exploding hydrogen cars basically shows that people don't understand the hydrogen technology. We're not talking about putting hydrogen in a big old Zeppelin like the Hindenburg, where it's way out there and you got the potential of a massive fire fueled by oxygen and air around it if something went wrong. You're talking about basically a gas that is lighter than air, so if you did for some reason get in a crash, that hydrogen is just going to like float away rapidly. It's not going to have time to burn. See, if you think about it, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen are in the air right now as we speak. You're breathing in and out nitrogen. And the only reason why the hydrogen-oxygen atoms that are actually floating around in the air is because of the way the nitrogen displaces these two apart. It's not allowing it to burn. It's keeping the oxygen at bay from the hydrogen. Otherwise, if you took all the nitrogen out of the air and somebody lit a match, we'd be screwed rapidly. I mean, like instantaneously. Poof, pow, we're gone. It's done. Adios, amigos.
Or some mad scientist kept playing around with static electricity.
Well, that's just going to move the hydrogen or the nitrogen nitrogen molecules and everything else out of the way. It's not gonna fry it out of the air.
I was trying to be facetious. You like to play around with static electricity, and you set a match. I mean, it doesn't take a match; just a spark.
Well, here's something for you. You're correct, because you know that big loud boom that you get whenever a lightning bolt cracks.
Right.
Well, you're literally hearing a hydrogen explosion, a hydrogen implosion when that lightning bolt hits up, and the oxygen will feed it for as long as the power lasts.
Right.
But the nitrogen in the atmosphere is actually keeping it at bay so that when a lightning bolt goes off, it doesn't just blow up the planet, you know? I think the creator of this planet was a really good, really knowledgeable in basic science.
Right, because actually one small lightning bolt takes over 20 tons of nitrogen. Did you know that? A small lightning bolt actually produces lightning. Nitrogen, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, we use nitrogen to help our grow plants and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
A good nitrogen soil will help the plants to grow. And keep it might keep the plants from getting too hot or, you know, too much of one thing or whatever. See, that's what's amazing about our atmosphere on this planet. It was designed in such a fashion that it balances itself out just with what's in the air.
Yes, it does.
And CO2 and several other molecules out there are heavier than oxygen, and they're heavier than hydrogen. And so they will displace things enough to where, you know, CO2 falls and nitrogen falls. And so that keeps everything, like I said, neutral. It keeps it at bay. That's that magic thing that keeps us from blowing up every time there's a lightning strike or a nuclear bomb going off. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. I really do.
Steven said, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. See, Henry Ford, thanks, Steven. I was talking about a phrase, if people back in Henry Ford's days would have believed in something or not believed in something, could have made a big difference in whether we ever made any advancements. And the actual phrase was that Steven found, he says, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. So if you think you can't do it, you're right, because you ain't going to try. if you think you can do it, you're going to at least step outside the box. And this is what makes me so angry about the Mythbusters, because they're supposed to be out there on the side of truth and science and, you know, fairly replicating things to test them out to see if it's a myth or not. And in reality, they're just disinformants. I used to have a lot of respect for the Mythbusters, but now I have absolutely no respect for them. I despise to even see their face because I'm ashamed for them.
Yes, me too. I mean, there are two things that they did. The one about the man being picked up by carrying a piece of firewood in the wind, and the wind picked him up, blah, blah, blah. And they supposedly bumped at that, but they did everything they did was the wrong way. And then turn right around. The one that really, really jacked my jaws and caused me to have absolutely no respect for them was when they did the, I can't even think of it, there's something other. Lost in Post, Wheel. When they did that, they did it so unbelievably.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. That's where they use the propane tanks to make that deal from temperature difference would do like
this. Yeah. Oh, there's some power there. It actually turns, but there's not enough power to do any good. Mother Earth News made one 23 feet in diameter in 1953. It picked a 180-pound man up off the floor. When he got up about 8 foot high, he turned loose. There was absolutely no visible sign that he slowed the wheel down. They measured it and was putting up 5 horsepower.
Well, and then the Motor Trend jumped on the Mythbusters bandwagon and said that, you'd have to have a 40,000-gallon tanker behind you so that you could have the equivalence of one deal of hydrogen, right? Well... That is pure ridiculousness, because you can just store that much energy in one little tank of water to go for thousands of miles using hydrogen. You just bring it, you got it in the tank, it's in safe mode as long as it's in water, and then you separate it as you need it. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. It burns my tongue just to say the name Mythbusters, because what they did to the Wallace Pinto's wheel was so ridiculous. I mean, an 8-year-old kid should have seen the flaw in it, of what they did. They deliberately tried to discredit it. There's no way in the world that two men with their knowledge could possibly do something that bad and it not be deliberate. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and so I'm going to add Barry to the call because he wanted to join in too. So basically what I'm trying to say here is, you know, the technology's out there, and there's industry out there that they don't want this out there, and it's not no doggone conspiracy theory, it's fact. If you're selling gasoline, why would you want people to know you could run a car on water, for Pete's sake? You don't. You don't want people to know you can run a car on water, but the Mythbusters came out there and they literally tried to make it sound like people were saying that you could literally put water in your gas tank and run it run your car off of it. That's basically what they were trying to say. And so that's just pure ridiculousness, because that particular engine wasn't engineered to run like that. You see,
the old saying about how somebody many years ago went to Washington D.C. got a couple of senators and showed them that he invented a car engine that would run on just pure water and this chemical that he had discovered, okay? So he entered the gas tank in front of them, filled it up with water, dropped in two or three of these tablets he made up, and they drove all the way around Washington, D.C. on the water and the pills. Thing is, what people don't realize is the pills were carbon tetrachloride. You put your carbon tetrachloride in the water, it makes acetylene gas. Come on. You run a car on water, the same water over and over again, just keep adding carbon tetrachloride to it. A car will run on acetylene gas until I have done it.
Well, like I said, man, if an engine is properly engineered for the specific purpose of burning water, then you will get it to burn water. Now,
yes.
You're going to have to treat the water before you actually start to shove it into the deal. So, essentially, by treating the water, I mean such as like with the design that I got, where you're using induction heating to actually raise the temperature of the cylinder up hot enough so that once that water is injected into it in really small poofs, so to speak, little tiny amounts, the moment that water hits the hot temperature of that cylinder, it will begin an expansion. The expansion will create the pressure that will push the piston down. When the piston's coming back up, the compression of the air inside that piston will literally generate more heat. And so the longer this thing runs and the hotter it gets inside there, you will get to a stage where now compression and heat will literally begin to separate the hydrogen and oxygen molecule. And at a certain temperature and pressure, it will literally self-ignite. A diesel engine does it already.
All the time.
So, when you tell people that it run on water, and they already seen an episode of Mythbusters, you see what I'm? You see the problem there?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I saw Mythbusters. They said you can't do that. And then another guy from Motor Trend, he said, "Well, you'd have to have a 45,000 gallon tank of hydrogen in the back." And I'm like, Really? Come on, man. You didn't pay no attention in science class, and if you were an automotive technician, you didn't pay very close attention in how an internal combustion engine functions, because right. You would already know that the two things required to cause combustion are already inside the internal combustion engine. Pressure and heat will separate hydrogen and oxygen. And then they say, well, you'd need an ignition source. Sure you would. That's what the heat and the pressure does. Causes self-combust. Look at the diesel engine.
Just what you said is exactly how a diesel engine works.
Yeah.
The pressure creates the heat, and the heat ignites the fuel. Like with the difference between what you're talking about and a diesel engine, with a diesel engine, you only spray the fuel in after you've created the heat from the pressure. But with the water, you wouldn't need that. You wouldn't need to spray the water in after you've created the heat from the pressure. Because as you create the pressure, if you've increased the pressure, you've increased the boiling point of the water to turn it to steam.
Yeah, and you know what else?
Yeah.
You could actually design into the same system a regulating system that would put too much water in order to bring the temperature of the burn down.
Exactly.
Everybody's talking about, hydrolocking, vapor locking. Here's the one I heard the other day about lubrication. I've been running a two-stroke engine for, quite some time now. I've been just, running it over and over and over and over and over, seeing how hot I can actually get it to see if I can actually destroy it. Alright? I've literally got this thing connected to electric drill, and I am sitting here just turning it and allowing the temperature to get up as hot as possible to see how much damage I can do to the cylinder with the rings. And because keep in mind, there's no oil involved in this. I'm not running two-cycle gasoline in there, so there's no oil mixture with it. All right. Now, under normal conditions, with no oil in your gas, that engine would literally tear itself apart. The rings would literally start scarring the cylinder wall. You'd lose compression, and you'd have little metal flakes down in the bottom of the motor and such, and eventually the bearings would fail, everything would fail because of friction and heat. It would destroy itself. However, since I'm injecting really tiny quantities of water inside this motor, it is literally lubricated enough to keep the metal temperature to the extent that it's not getting to its heat point where friction even matters. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
The water is the lubrication. Tell that to somebody and they'll think you're nuts. But I keep taking this motor apart. The longer I run it, I keep taking it apart. No scarring of the cylinder wall. No metal shavings in the bottom. No adverse effects to the motor. It's still just as good as it was. Still has just as good a compression. The rings aren't messed up. The cylinder walls are fine. And I just keep on doing it. Now, the only issue you would have in said situation is if you're using tap water like I am at the moment. Tap water has minerals in it that it shouldn't have in there. It has like chlorine and fluoride and whatever else crud comes down the pipe. It's not distilled water. And so if you allow it to set and dry out overnight, well, then oxidization will start taking over and you'll get a little bit of rust starting to build up inside there. Plus, the crystallization of things like what's the calcium that builds up in your water pipes and your hot water heater?
Iron.
Yeah, and iron. It will literally cause the ring to seize to the side of the wall, and you have to kind of force it back past it, lubricate it again, get it going again. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if you've got understanding such as that, then you wouldn't put regular tap water into it without filtering it before you run it through your motor. You'd distill it before you did it. And guess how they distill water, Raymond? Oh, wow.
And then it back down the water.
Did you actually say that out loud, man?
Really. The thing is, if you start off with distilled water, make a closed loop to where the water, the steam from your exhaust, is condensed back into distilled water. Now you have no trash in your motor.
Yeah. So if you're running pure distilled water in the system, then you don't have to worry about the crud seizing up the block whenever it's done. And if it is a sealed system, and you don't have oxygen up inside the deal whenever it's just sitting idle, then you don't even have to worry about oxidization and rust. You see what I mean?
I do.
That's how if you spray paint something with Rust-Oleum, it doesn't rust because the metal is separated from the oxygen in the atmosphere with a layer of material. So as long as something can't get oxygen, then it would not rust. So if you was worried about this, you could literally design into a system a shutdown mode that would literally vacuum out the cylinders. I mean, put it under a vacuum. It's setting overnight now. It ain't rusted.
Right.
Now, have I said anything that doesn't fall in compliance with science or mechanics today?
So far that I know of.
No, man. It's all basic science. It's all basic mechanics. I tried to add Barry to the call, but I don't know if he's having problems getting in here or not. Maybe you could try to add him. You know how to do that?
Yeah.
All right. See if you can get him in here. But either way, folks, we have the technology, and I'm actually putting up or shutting up. I'm actually building an engine that will run off of distilled water. And I'll prove it, because I know how an air conditioner works. I know how an air compressor works. I know the physics of when you compress any gas, you generate heat. And I know how hydrogen and oxygen can be separated from water by pressure and heat. So if you got this in the cylinder and you've already got it up to operating temperature and you start injecting small quantities of water in there, you got pressure and you got the heat, you already have everything you need. You already have the oxygen for combustion. You already have it all. Barry said he'll be in a few. It's probably, you just ain't picked up yet. Anyway, so it's not because your automobile could not run on hydrogen technology, because even in their debunking video, the Mythbusters actually proved hydrogen technology, because they took pure hydrogen and sprayed it down in the carburetor and was able to start the car. They're just trying to make it look like, well, you know, it'll work if you got pure hydrogen, but it's not plausible. And the Motor Trend jerk, who's supposedly a mechanic, he said that, and keep in mind, these are two separate deals. The Motor Trend guy was doing a deal trying to tell people about, will hydrogen give you better fuel economy and such or whatever. Anyway, he did this, just like the Mythbusters, he did a disinformation. He did a disservice to humanity is what he did. But he said that you'd have to have a 45,000 gallon tanker behind you to match what you got in the gasoline tank.
That's bullhunk.
Yeah, what an idiot, man.
Really, for me.
So, for those folks out there who want to sit around and complain about how the world's polluted, wake up, man. If you want to save the planet, listen to guys like me and Raymond and other folks out there in the alternative energy community that are trying to do the honest thing and show people the possibilities of stuff. There's hydrogen technology out there like you wouldn't believe. There's one video you can go watch. Look up HCAT and you'll find where these guys are just spraying hydrogen directly on the material inside a catalytic converter and they're bringing that that material up to over 600 degrees Fahrenheit. Just by no flame, just by putting the hydrogen in contact with the catalyst that's inside that catalytic converter, it causes a chemical reaction that brings that doggone material up to over 600 degrees. That's some pretty telling information there.
You know, a lot of people don't understand what the catalytic converter is. It's sort of one purpose and one purpose only.
No, actually, it has two purposes. One,
what?
One side of the catalytic converter is a reducer, and the other side is a reburner.
Reburner?
Yeah.
It was actually designed to burn the fuel that your inefficient motor is actually throwing away.
The side
that's pollution.
The side that's closest to your motor, it has a different core than the side that is farthest away from your motor. The side that's the closest to your motor is actually a reducer. It breaks the molecules down to a smaller, more manageable deal, so that when these molecules finally hit the opposite side and that they interact with the catalyst inside there, they create the burn that we know that the catalytic converter does. That in between there, there's actually a outflow valve that some of that reburnt fuel gets sent right back around into the intake and reburnt in the intake again. It's pretty amazing.
Yep.
And so I was thinking about this just yesterday. This would be a really simple experiment for somebody to try. Is that when you know that you're wasting a lot of fuel coming out of the exhaust of a, let's say, a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton, right? You waste a lot of fuel because it's not all getting burned up in the combustion portion. Now, what do you think hypothetically would happen if you took the exhaust pipe and literally rerouted it all the way around the motor and aimed it, not put it inside the cylinder, but just aimed it right in front of the air breather? What do you think would happen?
Not sure.
Well, since you got unburnt fuel coming through there, since the carburetor is actually creating a vacuum, which is sucking in air inside the intake, then you would literally be burning the waste fuel that is coming out of the exhaust in through the intake. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, you wouldn't get it all because some of it would be dispersed because of the pressure that's coming out of the exhaust. Some of it would be dispersed out into the atmosphere. But if you could guide that exhaust around into a storage chamber large enough that would never pressurize and cause backflow on it, you could literally use the exhaust off of your engine as fuel, just like a wood gasifier would be to a, or even a propane modification to the engine. You see what I mean?
Yep.
Because now you have those exhaust fumes, which is some of it is unburnt fuel, but it's already vaporized and ready to come back into the system and be reburnt again. So you could literally get an existing internal combustion engine to burn its own exhaust.
Thing is, why go to all that trouble? But all you have to do is put the gas, turn the gas into a vapor to start with, and you know, well, you don't burn as much of it. And what would you do?
Well,
you do. You don't get carbon monoxide. You get carbon dioxide because it's a complete burn.
Yeah, well, I'm agreeing with you 100%, but I'm just merely pointing out the fact that even with the turkeys that we're running right now, you can burn the doggone exhaust fumes.
Yes, you can.
So here's a perfect way to do this, man. This would be funnier than heck. You take two Briggs & Stratton engines, one without any gas in it at all, period, no gas whatsoever. And you take one with gasoline in it, and you aim the exhaust at the air breather of the second engine that has no fuel in it. Start the first one up and allow all that system to do what it does, waste fuel and carbon monoxide or whatever comes out the exhaust pipe, and then fire up that second engine and see if it will turn over with the exhaust fumes off of the other one.
That's something we can really try.
So you would literally be able to take these doggone engines, run them in series with each other, using the exhaust fume, build you a chamber that will hold the exhaust to the extent where it's not going to be able to cause enough pressure to backflow into and interfere with the other motor. You're just using it for exhaust purposes only, this tank. And then you take that gas that comes up out of that exhaust and you pipe it into the next one in line, and then you do that to the next one in line until the very last one in line finally won't run anymore because you've already burnt up all the fuel by the time it gets there. What do you think?
Well, if you built something like that and demonstrated, I think you'd be raising some eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I saw something like that and I went, well, you know, we have problems with car exhaust, and here we can take that exhaust and run another engine with it, that would be a no-brainer in my world, especially in places like China and Hong Kong where the air is so bad right now that people can't even go out on the streets.
Well,
the biggest commodity is free air, is pure oxygen. The biggest commodity now in Hong Kong is oxygen dispensers on corners.
Everybody,
so people can breathe.
Yeah. Everybody knows that carbon to burn. Everybody knows that carbon to burn.
Well, and that would be something to build a demonstration model. What would it cost to actually do something like that? Should this?
Well, it would.
You know, I know people with. Up here in British Columbia, I talked with one gentleman. His name's, his last name's Munson. I won't say his first name. But anyways, they're the richest people in Terra. And I talk to the guy all the time in the coffee shop now, and I throw ideas at him. And he's paying attention to a lot of things I'm saying. He owns a company called Bear Creek Contracting up here. And they're major contractors in the north. But he's a young guy, and he's starting to pay attention to a lot of things going on around him. And boy, if I could show him something like this,
right.
These kind of guys would grab it and run.
Next time you see
actual working model.
Next time you see him, ask him if he's ever seen a situation where the fuel and air mixture wasn't running like it should have, and the actual exhaust pipe itself got red hot, and then on one of the exhaust strokes it literally ignited the exhaust and you got a big flame that poofed out. See, think about back during the rat rod days, whenever they used to take these engines and they would make them to where they would deliberately backfire and shoot a flame out the back, made it look cool.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They were just reburning that exhaust as it was coming out because you're not getting a perfect burn on the way that the systems are designed right now. And so there's no reason why you couldn't take the exhaust and use it in the same fashion that you would have to use wood gas. And all you'd have to do, maybe run it through a bubbler system and then turn around and feed that into there. You'd have to adjust your airflow mixture and your fuel mixture to a different deal because now you're not squirting a stream of gas in there, only you're running on fumes. So the same technology that...
It just is.
Yeah.
Have you got a passport?
No.
Where did you get one?
I don't know if I can get one.
Well, you should.
I can look into it.
You should. You should, because... you know, if I spark some interest in these gentlemen, I would love to have you up to Canada and actually let you talk to some people that are very well to do. Let's put it that way. Ian, one of the things I've talked to him lately about, which is it's really sparked his interest, is hemp, okay? Because Ian now is starting to become aware of the problems in our ocean, and it's starting to concern him greatly. It's common talk now on the streets of any city in northern British Columbia or in southern British Columbia of Fukushima's radiation levels being detected in our fish now. And he's hearing stuff like this now, and I talked to him about hemp, and I talked to him about free energy. And I started talking about magnetic generators, and I mentioned some of the other things, and I started talking about fusion generators. And I told him, you know, I'm not a scientist, but, you know, I sit with this group of people that are pretty intellectual people, and they got some really cool ideas. So maybe you should get a passport, and maybe one day I'd get you up here and sit down with some of these people in a room and really kind of put out to them exactly what we can do.
Because
they have the tools, and they have the money, and they have the facilities to build just about anything. They've got shops there that have got hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of tools in them.
Up until that point, see if you can't arrange a Skype meeting, and we could sit around and talk about it. That way they understand the idea. That's a good idea.
I could do that. I could get a Skype call set up with Ian and let him hear it from you guys for a while, exactly what you can do.
What we're seeing now is
people are actually, in the last 3 or 4 months here, I've noticed it more than before, is people are actually now talking about the ocean a lot. Everybody knows now, it seems like everybody's heard and knows that the ocean's dying really quickly. And that's a conversation in a lot of the coffee shops now. So, people are really starting to look for answers here.
I'll jump off of this subject for a second to address that subject. Some of the things that people don't understand out there is basic science. If you're sending radioactive water into what would normally be like 65 degree water temperature or whatever, you know, I'm just using 65 because it's the first thing coming to mind. All right, but either way, the water is cooler than the water coming out of that that plant that's radioactive. Several things are going to happen here. Because that water temperature is hot, and because it's not going to reduce temperature anytime soon the moment it hits that other water, because it's water, by the way. But it's got some radioactivity to it, so it's going to stay hot for quite some time, and it's going to heat up its surrounding waters around it, all right? Well, when that happens, that water temperature difference is actually going to create a reaction in the water itself, which causes like a regular tornado. You mix hot air with cold air, you get rotation, and next thing you know, you got a tornado when it gets out of hand. The same thing would happen in water. When you mix cold water with hot water, you're going to create rotation. You're going to create a difference that would literally, at some point, cause any underwater stream to scoot over. You follow me so far?
Oh, yeah. I got you.
So, the temperature difference will cause a normal, what would have normally been a direction of a cold water stream that's underneath it, they call the Gulf Stream, all right? Well, if the Gulf Stream shifts over even a foot, you know, it's going to change the temperature all the way down the road because of the basic science and physics of how water and temperature react with one another. Once that happens, then you're going to notice things on the other side of the planet that you can't explain, because for some reason what's going on, you know, it's like it's warmer over here than it normally is. Well, that's because all the chemistry that's in the Earth and the atmosphere is being redirected and changed by an event such as hot water coming out of this radioactive facility. Normally, hot water would blend with the cold water and cool down rapidly, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But if you got hot radioactive water interacting with cold water, and then the water's still radioactive, and it's causing the temperature difference to literally change, you can change the temperature, or change the direction of the jet, the Gulf Stream, which in reality will cause the jet stream to change as well. And so now,
right, that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, so now you'll get crazy weather on the other side of the deal, because you got weather where you didn't have weather before, because normally where the Gulf Stream's going and where the jet stream's going according to nature, you know, you got your weather where you're at according to where the sun is at any given time, and temperatures raised up over here could melt ice that would then in turn causes the water to flow out, and then that water flow would create more pressure down onto like seismic activities, fault lines,
right,
and stuff like that, which would cause earthquakes over on somebody else's side. So you're
right,
literally messing with nature to the extent that now you're causing the change in weather, and that is man-made climate change, but it's not It's not what you're talking about as far as carbon emissions. You see what I mean?
Oh, exactly. The carbon emission is just a scam. We know that. Anybody that's really looked into it knows it's just a scam. Carbon is not causing our atmosphere and our weather to change. The jet stream right now, she says, I was reading an article on that this morning, actually. First thing this morning, I read an article on the jet stream and how it is absolutely, totally, really, they've never seen it so erratic. It is doing things they've never seen it do, and what's happening, like you said, warm water is reaching the Arctic. We're seeing ice melt. We're seeing large releases of methane, because when ice does melt, it's trapped vegetation that's been rotting there for thousands of years, and when it's exposed to the air, it creates methane gas. Well, we're seeing large, huge amounts of methane being released on the Earth right now, and that just adds to the warming effect. Am I correct?
Yeah, but see, it's only correct in the sense that it's in a general area, because you can't do this globally. All right. If you change the weather on this side over there, you're going to change the weather on that side. It's going to be hotter over there for them. But globally, it's not causing what they're trying to portray. It's not causing the entire Earth to heat up. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's causing bad weather where bad weather shouldn't be, because if you got certain chemistry,
right,
and like let's say the ice, for example. We already explained how if ice melts and it creates more water that interacts with the plates by the pressure of that water pushing down on it, which is going to cause an earthquake for somebody over there. However, this other side of the planet ain't affected in it at all, because it's not in the path of where this energy is actually being transferred to. So it's not a global catastrophe, as in everybody on the planet's going to fry. It is a global catastrophe in the sense that what I do upstream will affect you downstream. You see what I mean? We're causing
Absolutely.
Some problems, especially with fracking. If you crack open the ground and release natural gas out of the ground and you empty that pocket out, you no longer have hydraulic pressure in that pocket that will hold that ground up. If you pump all the water out from underneath the water table and now you don't have that hydraulic pressure, then you end up with sinkholes. If you take the hydraulic pressure out from underneath the foundation of your house, and everybody knows this because they've had a basement crack on them, is because during certain dry times, your ground will recede. During water times, your ground will expand, which will create hydraulic pressure, and it's that moving up and down that causes your foundation to literally crack.
What you're talking about is exactly what we have, and everybody here in North Texas has the same situation. Every year, we have a wet year, and the ground swells. We have a dry year, the ground shrinks, cracks. I mean, we're talking cracks big enough to stick your hand in. I took a bin in the construction. I used a 12-foot-long 11-gauge wire to hold up my ceilings. I took a piece of this wire, took it, shook it, and run it down one of these cracks until I could barely hold the end of it, turned it loose, and it was several seconds before I could hear it actually hit the bottom. These cracks are really deep. You're right. I mean, it's unreal. The people have to put water soaker hoses around their house on dry years to keep the ground wet so it doesn't crack and crack their foundations on their house. I mean, that's just a normal thing here. People just deal with it, you know?
I saw a comment in the chat room from Mike that said, carbon in fuel absorbs heat fast enough to continue expansion in today's engine. He said, can CO2 be converted to hydrocarbon, or HCO? I wish Thomas was in here because he could explain it better, but the type of engines that we're actually capable of building wouldn't have any carbon involved in it whatsoever. If you use pure distilled water to run an engine, there's no carbon burning in there, so you don't have that problem. In gasoline, when we're burning gasoline, you do get hydrocarbons. All
right?
And so where in some instances, you remember like way back in the old days they used to have lead in the fuel?
Yeah.
Well, they don't do that anymore, but that lead in the fuel at the time was actually beneficial, because believe it or not, lead is a softer metal than the actual cylinder walls, and it helped to you know, keep your engine from being destroyed. You see what I mean?
Yes.
But when they got the better types of pistons and the better types of rings and they wanted to clean or burn, they decided to take the lead out of the gasoline. And so now you don't have that factor of that lead being actually a plus in the engine anymore. You see what I mean?
You know, that thing about it really ticked me off when they started making unleaded gasoline. The unleaded gasoline cost 10 to 15 cents a gallon more than the leaded gasoline, but they didn't have to put the lead in it. Gasoline, when it's made, does not contain lead. They had to put it in it. So they were actually producing gas without lead cheaper, but yet they charged more for it. You know, I mean, whoa.
Oh, yeah, and then they started mixing gasoline with ethanol, all right?
Holy.
One of the things that people didn't realize about the modern-day gasoline will evaporate rapidly. Think about it.
Yes,
it evaporates faster, so if there's any way for that, Doug, you open up your fuel tank, you hear that psss come up out of there? Can you smell the vapor?
I watched a lot of videos on YouTube where people using bubbles to...
If you ain't got a lid on it, and you put your gas can out in the doggone deal and leave it long enough with modern-day gasoline, put a mark on your gasoline can. Don't put a lid on it. Set it out in your shed, and then come out every so often and remark where the gasoline level is. And do that if you can get a hold of it, a leaded version, and try it. You know, one that doesn't have ethanol. One of those that have ethanol mix in it, and you'll notice a significant difference in how much gas you got left in that can, because even gasoline will evaporate, all right? But ones with ethanol, where you got more ethanol going on in there than you do the gasoline portion, or even a portion, a quarter of it, or whatever, being ethanol with whatever mix they got. You'll go out there and you'll find out that you're going to lose gas from evaporation just in that process, where it might give you a cleaner burn down the road or whatever. But you also note too that in certain types of fuels that you run through your car, while they are cleaning your car because of detergents that they add to them, it also, if you don't have your air fuel mixture just right, you'll get that knock 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 going on in your engine, that rattle whenever you step your foot on the gas and you're in the wrong gear, and you get that pinging noise going on in your engine. You'll see that more often nowadays than you would have if you had regular leaded gasoline in that engine. Why is that, man?
So one of the reasons for the gasoline, I mean, for the lead in the gas, was to protect the valves and the valve seats.
Yeah.
Because the gasoline burns so hot, it would burn the valves if you didn't have the lead in the gas. But nowadays we have chrome moly steel, which that's what they make your valves and valve seats out of. They don't burn at a low temperature. It takes a really, really high temperature for them to burn. So with the advent of chrome moly, that means that you can burn gasoline fumes. And what I was getting ready to say a minute ago, I've watched hundreds of videos on YouTube where people are using bubblers to actually gasify the gasoline in the fumes and use it in the engine. But a couple of people have noticed that it'll only run an engine for so long, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then it stops. And that's simply because when you vaporize a liquid of any kind, you're actually sucking the heat out of the liquid. The liquid will actually drop in temperature. But now if you just simply use your exhaust to heat the gasoline, to keep the warmth in it, then it will continue to run. And the actual BTUs of energy in 1 gallon of gasoline, if all those BTUs were used for the propulsion of the vehicle, 1 gallon of gasoline will drive the modern-day automobile 360 miles.
You're right.
At 2 miles an hour.
Let me address something for Barry's area, because Canada gets a little cold up there, right, Barry?
Yeah. No, sometimes.
All right, well, Canada, Alaska, for those folks out there in those areas where you got like cooler climates, there was a concern about, well, if you're running water in cold areas like that, how would you keep the fuel line from freezing up? Raymond, what temperature does water boil at in a vacuum?
At sea level? At a vacuum?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. All right, let's go with millibars, all right? 1,000 millibars is air pressure at sea level. At 5 millibars, water boils at 55 degrees.
All right, so think about this for a second. You got your vehicle, while it's under operating temperature, you don't have to worry about while it's hot, it's going to keep the water from freezing even in the coldest climate. And so, with that said, when you go home and you park your vehicle, now you got a problem. Now you normally have to have antifreeze in there to keep the water from being able to freeze and cause damage to the engine. So what happens if you got a system set up so that you could literally, when you shut your car off, it has a vacuum system that will literally vacuum that all the water tanks and stuff down to, you know, whatever it takes to keep that up at a certain temperature that you need to keep that thing from freezing overnight.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
So even the drawbacks from being in certain climates can be addressed to the extent you don't no longer have to put antifreeze into your vehicle, so you don't have to worry about, if you get a car crash, gallons of antifreeze dumping down into the waterways and stuff like that. You know, they got antifreezes now that they make that are nasty so that animals won't try to drink them, because antifreeze is sweet and the animals will drink it and then they'll die. See what I mean? But you could make an environmentally friendly system that you wouldn't even have to have antifreeze, just by adding a vacuum system on this thing, so that whenever you're not using the fuel, you can vacuum it down to heat it up and leave it at that certain temperature all night long, and then whenever you get ready to drive the thing, you shut the vacuum system off, you turn on the preheater, 30 seconds later you're driving down the doggone road again. So, we got to do is re-engineer what's already a good thing. There's nothing wrong with internal combustion engines, with exception of how we run them.
Exactly.
That's a fuel. Internal combustion engine is a brilliant piece of engineering. I mean, it's amazing. And utilized properly, you could get untold gas mileage out of it. I mean, astronomical gas mileage out of it. There's no reason to burn gallons of gas when you can do it for a fraction of what it takes to do it.
Right.
And if you can take gasoline completely out of the equation and just use straight distilled water, what do you got? Because, check this out. It's crazy, but it's true. You go study up a heat exchange system. You can get cold air from heat. Am I wrong?
Yeah. No, you're not. You can't.
And on the opposite scale, you can get heat from cold air. It's all dependent on how you use these gases, how you pressurize them, whatever. So,
yeah. I mean, isn't that exactly how an air conditioner works?
Yeah.
Except you're using Freon instead of outside air, but you can use outside air. I mean, you and I, that's how we come up with the idea of using water in an engine and use a piston to compress the air, which condenses the heat, and then use that heat to heat a little bit of water so that the water turns to steam and drives the piston down.
Well, you know the only purpose for Freon?
Sure. We're just taking heat here and moving it over there. That's all we're doing.
The only purpose for Freon and the oil that you put inside the compressor is for lubrication purposes of the compressor itself, and because Freon's just a little bit easier to pressurize and change, you know, rapidly because of the way it's designed. But you can do the same process without any kind of oil involved, without any kind of, noxious gas or whatever you want to call it involved. Any gas, including air, oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, doesn't matter, any of the noble gases can be pressurized. And then when you pressurize them, they'll produce heat. And whenever you turn around and allow that pressurized gas to spray out into an expansion chamber, a.k.a. a condenser, you get an instantaneous cooling effect as that heat transfer is taking place.
You know, Shaziz, that's exactly how I take my cup saws and drill holes in composite woods, such as plywood, MDF, OSB board that has a lot of glue in it. When you start drilling these holes, the glue melts and clogs up the teeth on your cup saw. What I do is I take my big air compressor, about 150, 140 gallon tank on the thing, and I pump it all the way up to 150, 200 PSI. Then I wait for the tank to cool down. The air that comes out of there is freezing, I mean freezing cold. It will give me frostbite. And I use that to blow the dust and keep the wood cold, and my cup saws do not clog up. Think about it.
Oh, crud, did we just lose Barry?
Yeah.
Oh, that stinks. I had something I was going to tell him about. Oh, well.
But I use that process of, you know, compressing the air, condensing the heat into one place so it gets really hot, then let it cool off. And that air, that compressed air, doesn't have a lot of heat in it. So therefore, it's ice cold, and it keeps the glue from melting and blows the sawdust out of the way.
Cool. So where there's a will, there is definitely, without a doubt, a way.
Yes.
There's a video that somebody posted in the chat right there. It says, Ron Paul, best sources of... I can't read the rest of the title. Do you know what that was? Well, let's click on it and find out what it says.
I can't get to that chat room.
I just did. Ron Paul, best source of ethanol is hemp.
Absolutely.
So there
you know
go.
What? If you know what, Chazes, if they allowed Mr. Ford to produce all the fuels that he wanted to produce out of hemp-based ethanol in 1922 or 23, I think it was, we would have none of the problems we have on the planet Earth today.
Yeah.
Because everything we're doing with fossil fuels can be done with hemp, but with no carbon footprint, no garbage going into your engines. Your engines will last three times as long as they would burning carbon-based gasoline. It's the no-brainer, and it was taken away from society. All we have to do in the meantime, while we bring all these cool inventions to the forefront, is get back to it, hemp-based ethanol, and all carbon disappears. Their agenda for carbon bullcrap would go away.
You know, I just thought of something just totally, totally insane with that doggone engine that I was talking about where you can actually burn the exhaust off of another engine. We were just talking about expansion and of gas and then releasing it into a condenser. Tell me, think about this for a second. Tell me, Raymond, if you believe it's plausible. The exhaust is pressurized. And so if you go out there and you try to put a match in front of the exhaust, chances are it's not going to light because of everything that's going on. It's hitting the atmosphere that has nitrogen, which is displacing the oxygen, and the pressure is blowing your match out, right? So you couldn't literally just sit there and burn the exhaust unless you was running really lean, and you might blow up your car in the process. And you don't want to do that. And so what if you took that exhaust and allowed it to run through an expansion chamber? It's already pressurized and heated, and so when it hits that expansion chamber, all of a sudden you got that gas expanding out inside there, and now it has a cooling effect to it. So you got an AC unit built in between these two engines. I'm loving this. And then you take that fuel, that unburnt fuel, and then turn around and put it right back into the carburetor of the next deal. You might even be able to take the doggone carburetor completely off of the thing and just run the pipe right straight into where the carburetor used to be and adjust your system accordingly with, you know, some regular valves or whatever. You know,
the thing I'm interested in here is this. Number one, the first engine is spitting out carbon one dioxide, that's one carbon, one oxygen atom, where if it was a complete burn, it would be one carbon atom and two oxygen atoms. So in what it's spitting out, it's not only spitting out raw fuel, because it's written design, but it's also spitting out quite a bit of oxygen as well.
Yeah, and if you ever went back there on certain days and you look at your exhaust pipe, you got little water dripping out of your exhaust pipe.
Right.
Because of the condensation built up due to the difference of the temperature of the heat at the muffler as opposed to the temperature of the heat at the exhaust pipe towards the back of the car, you actually build up condensation. Well, that condensation could also add as an extra benefit towards the fuel system of the next engine in line. So you could run the same doggone gas to run multiple engines in series with each other just using the exhaust off of each one of them alone.
Right.
Possible,
definitely.
Of course it is. But
if we could get a working demonstration of something like that, even in a small scale, that you could actually put it in front of somebody and say, hey, here's the engine, here's the exhaust coming out of the pipe, here's another engine that we're running off that exhaust. And if you could have a small working model of that, it would be an absolute no-brainer, because, like I said, we are really struggling with emissions around the world from automobiles, not so much in North America, but I look at places like Hong Kong and China, and holy smokes, people are dropping like flies from air pollution, and it's coming out of the tailpipes. So, boy, wouldn't that be a bonus for the old Earth, eh?
Well,
if we could show something like that to people that got money and grab it and go, wow, you know, that it works, so let's do it. Because all you need is something that you can show somebody that it works.
I'm going to work on this design because I've got enough friends around that have enough two-stroke engines that I believe we could actually do this with a two-stroke engine, be the simplest to modify, and start off running the first one on two-stroke engine oil and then run the rest of them down the line on just exhaust fumes alone, because believe it or not, when you're running a two-stroke engine, you don't just get unburnt fuel out there. You get unburnt oil out there. That's why you see that doggone white smoke coming out of your chainsaw.
You're right there.
So even the exhaust from a two-stroke engine, as long as you're running two cycle in the first, should be able to have enough lubricant to keep that next one in line from burning itself up. It's got the same mixture that it had before. All right, man, I'm excited.
Well, to me, it would be a no-brainer. How efficiently will the second engine run once the fuel has been consumed, once it's gone through the original engine, how much is left? That all can be done on computers, man. We have the technology now that we could break it down to the millicule. And find out exactly what it's going to take to make it work efficiently. But if it works if you can make a demonstration that actually works without even tweaking it, imagine what could be done if you tweaked it a little bit with the computer technology we got now.
Yeah, just don't give it to the Mythbusters. The Mythbusters freaking deny it before they try it and turn around and basically use disinformation or deceiving ways that they say about it. Because think about what we're talking about here. If you could literally run two engines for the price of one, man, you just doubled up your electric power.
Well, it's not only that, what kind of emissions are going to come out of that second engine? Very, very little if it's gone through two internal combustion reactions, right?
Yep.
I mean, you're burning off that fuel, so you're taking all that crap out. By the time it comes out the second pipe, it's going to be a lot cleaner than it comes out the first pipe, obviously. Well, I'm just thinking of pollution right now on the planet and how that could be applied. That would be a pretty cool situation if you could design something that could even feed back into your engine off that pipe and reburn that exhaust, you know, a complete enclosed system where you could maybe run it through your engine twice using computer calibrations to adjust for the amount of fuel.
You could continue.
I mean, that technology's there, man. It should be pretty cool to put something like that together.
You could continually run that doggone engine on the same doggone fuel until the fuel was finally dispersed to the point where it lost all its energy. Because
and even while that's happening, you could have an injection system putting new fuel in to compensate for the loss of power.
Yeah.
And run it through the system continually. So you're adding new fuel, it's being burnt, going through the systems. When it reaches the point where it's got no power left, you add more fuel to the system. I'm just, my mind's going in a million different directions on something like this.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that in between those, if you want to do it like I was talking about in series with separate motors, you add a Venturi valve where you'll literally be taking, pulling air in from outside so that you can adjust your air-fuel mixture on the opposite side for the next motor in line. You don't have too much air, you don't have too little, and you get a perfect burn on that one. The next one in line, if the next one in line doesn't run, then you know the max you can run is 2 inches for the same tank. You know? But if you can run 20 of them in line, dude, 20 engines running simultaneously off of the same gallon of gas.
How much electricity you could produce?
Yeah.
Holy smoke, shizzes. You power a city.
I'm telling you, Barry, I'm not as stupid as I look, man.
Crazy, yeah, but stupid, no.
Yeah, I paid attention in science class, and if you got to put a catalytic converter on a car to reburn waste fuels, then that tells me that
could be expanded.
Yeah, you could use that fuel instead of burning it up. You could use it to run the next motor in line. I mean, vaporized carburetors. People have been messing around making cars run off of vapor. And essentially, your exhaust is going to be a vapor. It's going to have hydrocarbons. It's going to have leftover gas that wasn't burned. Because the process is happening so rapidly under so much pressure that you don't have time to burn off all the fuel. So the catalytic converter will recapture some of it, but then you still don't get clean emissions. And that's why they got all these scams like emission test, where if you still got crud coming out of your pipe, you got to get a new catalytic converter because your old one ain't functioning. It's still functioning. They'll function for years until they get clogged up with soot or break down. But they'll function for years and be fine, but they won't pass a emissions test because they're not doing it as efficiently as they were when they were brand new. You see what I mean?
Interesting.
But
you
could take that knowledge of why the catalytic converter is even there to begin with, and you could use that dang exhaust to run another engine and keep on running all the way down until the very last engine won't run anymore. When the very last engine won't run anymore, guess what you got coming out of the exhaust pipe? Anybody?
Pretty clean. You got nothing.
Yeah!
Basic.
Nothing. You know, the thing is, why would we do all that engineering when really, truly, all we have to do is turn the gas in the fumes and run the engine off of that?
Well, you're right, but
you don't have any emissions. You've got just pure carbon dioxide.
You're right, but see, here's the key, Raymond, that might have got overlooked here in this process. I got a two-stroke engine, right? By itself, it has so much torque, has so many RPMs that it can run at. Now, what if I took that two-stroke engine and I mounted it on a block and then I put six more in line with it and I made a six two-strokes on this side, six two-strokes on that side, and now essentially what I had, and then at the very end of that, I put one last two-stroke on there, okay? So now I got the equivalence of a V13, all right? The last one is just a sacrificial to see if I can't get a burn on the last one, then I know my fuel is clean. All right? So I got these two-stroke engines connected to rods that are going down onto a crankshaft that are all connected to the same crankshaft, and I got these things running so that it's turning that crankshaft just like your pistons would normally turn it. So I start off running this on two-stroke engine oil, and by the time it finally makes it out, because this exhaust port is going into that motor, and this exhaust is going into the next motor all the way down the line through this entire system, and then by the time it gets to the 13th, which is the sacrificial motor just to check your emissions, which you probably wouldn't need once you found out that it was clean after it come out of the last one, because no more gases, there's no more crud to burn up. You've already burnt it all up. So now you literally built an engine out of existing technology that will bring out perfectly clean exhaust out to the other side, because by the time it gets to the 12th cylinder, it's already burnt off all the fuel, and the 12th cylinder is actually struggling to try to do its job, but it doesn't have to worry. You don't have to worry about it bogging down the motor, because the centrifugal force of the camshaft spinning around and all the torque involved in that is actually the crankshaft. Is actually causing the piston to still be able to go up and down. At that point, you could use that doggone that last motor over there for some other purpose, like air pressure or, you know, whatever. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I'm following you.
I mean, it sounds crazy, but crazy is what built this world, man.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Well, we're kind of in crazy times, so crazy things need to come forward, don't they?
So I guess the best and the first way to test this theory, because until it's actually put into physical work, it's not going to be nothing more than a theory based off of scientific principles. So I guess the best way to test this is to get two engines and see if you can run one engine off of just the exhaust off of the other engine. If that works, then we can expand on it to see how many we can run, and then we can take already existing two-stroke motors. And you won't even have to worry about having a starter on each one of them, because once you get one of them started, it will start all the compression of the other ones by pushing the pistons up and down inside there, and so you got a done deal. But we would literally be able to build a engine out of existing engines that would have a clean burn by the time it got out the exhaust. What do you think?
Well, if we could actually build a working model, Shaziz, you would sell 100 million of them in the first month, because everybody would want it, period. If you could build a feasible working model, it would be something that would be a no-brainer to market around the world, period.
Yep, there you go, man.
And you're going to fight some very, very powerful forces that would come and drone you from space to stop this information getting out to the public.
Well, I'm not going to fight them personally. I'm going to send this information out, and I'm going to keep on doing my videos like I do it. And so now that you've already heard this, and everybody else has already heard this, don't let the idea die with just one little podcast. Just keep on rolling. If you like these podcasts, pass them around and let people hear the craziness you heard here on Mad Science. Because if this is possible, what I'm saying, when I believe it's fully possible, otherwise you wouldn't need a catalytic converter. Otherwise there wouldn't be no terminology such as emission control. All right? And there wouldn't be basically people worrying about global emission, climate change due to carbon, whatever. If you got a perfect burn every single time you ran that engine, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. You could run your engines and your industries the same way. You see what I mean? If you've got a big giant machinery that you're running off of diesel fuel, and you know that now you can run the doggone next machine in off the same fuel that you're running, who wouldn't want to do that?
You don't think these people have known about this technology for years, Shaziz? They know what you're talking about right now. I honestly believe they know that this is feasible and it works, but they're not going to bring that kind of information forward, so that's why it's important we do shows like this. The technology they have, man, fossil fuels should have become a thing of the past, 50 years ago, and I believe they had the technology then to make it a thing of the past, but of course there's money in fossil fuels, so... We just got to get it out. This
Mike
is a pretty cool
said,
show.
Mike said in the chat room, low RPM engines are outlawed in the U.S. because there is time to convert all the fuel.
The fuel, exactly.
So they're getting a perfect burn with a low RPM engine?
That's what he's saying.
Well, that's the first time I heard it, but I don't doubt it, not one doggone bit.
Well, if you think about it, you're slowing down the combustion. You're slowing it down, so you're giving it more time to burn the fuel that's there, because the motor's not working as fast. It's not trying to keep up as fast.
By George, you're right.
I'm not a scientist, but that's common sense.
By George, you're right, because I just explained it on the last show how the reason why you can't get a perfect burn is because that piston's going up and down too doggone fast. Mike, you're brilliant. God, I love people like that. a low part RPM engine, just like you explained it, Barry, would give it enough time for a complete burn. Even though that engine's not going to hit the RPMs, it will get a complete burn, and you can get just as much torque out of that downstroke as you could before. You don't have to run the engine as hard, so the engine itself isn't going to get near as hot.
Exactly, and you can do that through a gear ratio.
The torque, okay?
Yeah.
Torque and speed, they are interchangeable. So you got a slow RPM engine, but if you gear it up, you got a lot of speed.
Yep.
Fuck that. It's interchangeable.
See?
Build a low RPM, you get a lot of torque, a complete burn, but then you gear it up to where you get the speed to drive your vehicle.
This is brilliant, guys. I got a lot of favorite Mad Science shows because we've talked about some really awesome stuff on here that if people actually paid attention to and took it to heart and actually went out and tested what we're saying, they would see we're right. But this is really exciting because it actually gets you the opportunity to, if what this last deal we talked about using exhaust for fuel, if that works, that would unlock a potential for the average Joe to go out and buy a couple cheap old two-stroke weed eater motors, clean them up, modify how the fuel's used on, you use it the same way you did on the first one. Modify how it is used on the second and on down the line as many as you could run in one line because the way that they run, the RPMs are fast enough that you're not going to get a complete burn the way that you're using the fuel normally. And so it should that exhaust should carry enough fuel down the line to run all these engines. And so if that's the case, now instead of you having one engine being able to turn one generator head, you got multiple engines able to turn multiple generator heads, which in turn, by the time it gets out the other side, have perfectly clean exhaust. And it's not beyond the realms of what people can actually manufacture in their own garage. You take that rod that comes out of it, normally turns the deal, you put a cam lobe or a spindle on that thing, essentially the equivalence of a crankshaft, like a wheel that has an offset deal that pushes up and down a rod. There's the cam rod right there that would turn on a cam shaft. You see what I mean?
Real simple.
Man, that's exciting.
Hey, listen, gentlemen, I have another commitment here this morning. I'm going to have to step out of here.
All right, well, spread the good news, man.
Yeah, and you guys have a great day, and thanks for having me in here, and I'll talk to you tomorrow morning, Shiz.
Yeah.
On the night of the round table.
Mike, if you ever want to join in, just add me on Skype there, or add one of the people you're hearing on there. You got Raymond Head, Barry Prince, and Muddy Muddy Mudman, and Thomas Anderson. You use that, any of those folks on Skype, we'll drag you up in there.
Okay, guys, have a great day.
All right, take care, Barry. Thanks again. Brilliant conversation, as usual. Great stuff. So, what do you think, Raymond?
I love it. You know, hey, she says, you ever mess around with many diesel engines?
No, but I've looked at a bunch of them, and I'm starting to be really impressed by them.
Well, you know, a real diesel engine doesn't have glow plugs or spark plugs.
It just uses compression.
Right. The heat is the compression. It is what actually ignites the fuel.
Yep.
But you know that you can take a diesel engine, take your handkerchief and put about 6 or 7 drops from an eyedropper of gasoline on that handkerchief. When the diesel engine is actually running, you can hold it up close to the air breather and listen to that engine to wind up and start running faster just from the fumes off of your handkerchief of the gasoline. You can actually, if you get it right, you can reach over and turn the damn diesel fuel off and the engine will keep on running.
There you go, man. I'm telling you what, this is exciting because this just unlocked the doggone floodgate in my mind.
The 1 gallon tank of diesel fuel and pour 1 quart of gasoline in it, and that engine, when you start it up, that engine will blow up. It will actually blow up like a bomb and throw steel everywhere. But yet the fumes, just the fumes from 8 or 10 drops of gasoline on a rag in front of the air breather will cause that engine to wind up, and it will not blow the engine up. If you get it too close, it'll cause it to wind up to where it actually destroys itself by its speed, not the explosion. You can run a diesel engine off a gasoline fumes. It's very dangerous, but you can do it.
Well, that's because they weren't necessarily engineered to run off of that type of fuel. But regardless, it still can be done. And so, knowing all these little tricks of basic science and mechanics, man, there ain't no reason under the sun why it is that we should have to be paying near what we do for fossil fuels, what they call it, which is a misnomer, once again.
No.
But nonetheless, not arguing with their science, not arguing with their physics, not even arguing with their math of how things run right now, regardless of all that and all the naysayers and all the other stuff right there, you don't have a catalytic converter on your car for no reason whatsoever. The catalytic converter on your car is a reburner.
Exactly.
Used properly, it could be a heat exchanger as well.
Main purpose is to burn up wasted fuel so you don't pollute the air with unburnt fuel.
Yeah. So, using smarter mechanics, then you could build machinery custom designed to literally burn on demand pure distilled water and not have to worry about all the rest of the craziness. But to prove a point, I'm going to try to find enough little two-stroke motors, and I'm going to run the first one off of the standard amount of fuel, and then I'm going to modify the next ones down the line to literally run off of the exhaust fume, because I know for a fact that you can smell it every time you're running a weed eater. You can smell the fuel run coming out of that thing.
Yes, you can.
And so between the temperature the first engine generates, that's already going to have the fuel warmed up and primed for the next engine. So, and if it's too hot, then all I gotta do is put a heat exchanger in between there and cool it down to the temperature that I do like. You see what I mean?
Now that's a daggone good idea.
Man, yes. That's what we do here is good ideas. Yeah, when you tell the average auto mechanic that you could drive an engine without any oil in it whatsoever, they'll look at you cross-eyed like you just spoke blasphemy. Man,
yeah.
Look, I have sat here and run for days at a time. This little two-stroke motor using nothing more than water injected into the dang thing. And I'm not putting a lot in there. I'm just putting just enough to try to get the combustion going on. And I keep tearing this motor apart because it's a real simple motor to pull apart. And I'm looking for damage inside there. I'm looking for the rings to grind up on the piston, the cylinder walls. No scarring, the bearings are still just as good as they were before. The only drawback that I've noticed is because I'm actually using water right straight out of the doggone tap, is that it has impurities in there like chlorine or whatever, that when you leave the thing sit overnight without any kind of treatment or whatever, it will literally seize, it'll stick the ring to the cylinder wall, and you got to force it around to get it going and put a little bit of water in there to lubricate it back up. But once you do that, then doggone it starts running again. I'm running for hours at a time. Now, how many engines do you know out there right now that you could drain the oil completely off, run them for hours at a time, and not do any damage?
Well, I know what you expect me to say, but I've got a little experience of my own, and I ran a 2-horsepower Briggs & Stratton motor for over an hour and 45 minutes with no oil in the motor at all, other than residual oil. And I did it about 6 different times. Now, running it without oil, the piston and cylinders would get hot, and they'd swell up, and the engine would slow down and stop. And I pulled it apart all 6 times. And pulled it apart, and there was no scarring whatsoever, but I had treated the engine inside with tetrafluoroethylene, which the DuPont brand name is Teflon. Teflon-coated engine? No. Putting the water in it, like you're talking about, would be the lubricant that would keep it cool so it would not swell up and slop.
Yep.
Yes, you can run an engine on water.
And like I tried to mention earlier, using the physics of water, you could literally, if the cylinder began to get too hot, you could inject too much water into the cylinder, which wouldn't even change the combustion, other than maybe producing a little steam or whatever, you know. But regardless,
that is correct. If the engine started to get a little bit too warm, you would have it set to where it would just put just a hair more water in that water and would suck the heat up and spit it right out the exhaust.
Yep.
Right.
There you go.
100% right on that one.
Look, I know people out there, they call me everything under the doggone sun and think I'm crazy. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. But I
guess you are crazy.
Huh?
Yeah, I said you are crazy.
Well, yeah, I'm crazy.
I'm not stupid.
I admit to that, but I ain't stupid. You know, I paid attention in science class, right? And so with that said, if you guys really seriously want to get going on the projects, all you got to do is contact us. It's that simple. We got a group that we put together called Perfect Engine, and we'll add you in there if you're serious about wanting to help for work on it. Tell your friends about it. Tell the other social media networks out there if they want to get involved, or radio networks that want to rebroadcast. Or there's tons of podcasts up there. This podcast will be up there. Take this podcast, send it around to your friends, and let them hear what we're saying. Tell them to test the science on it. You know, I'm not saying anything out there that I wouldn't want anybody to try to check out or verify, because here's the thing, if you go out there and try to prove it wrong and prove it right, then that's just going to help the whole process, and we'll be off the whole carbon emission scam for good. Steven says, have you tried adding a little H2O2 hydrogen peroxide to the engine you're running on water? No, I haven't tried that, but yeah, that's a great idea. I'll give that a shot and see what happens. Get back with you on it. But see, look, man, the government said it, the mainstream media said it, all the green freaks of the world said it, we got to get off of fossil fuels, even though fossil fuels is a joke, even though you're never going to run out of fossil fuels, so this argument will last forever and a day as long as nobody gets onto it. And the only way it's going to get done is with the average Joe. The shade tree mechanic, the backyard inventor, those individuals are the ones that we need on the dream team, because they're not educated to the extent where they're willing to shut their mind off to potential advancements. Now, if you're a college educated person, I give you credit for the work you've done and for your hard work in order to get your diploma. But if you're willing to step outside the box just to see for yourself if it's possible, you're welcome on the team as well. But we have had our share of naysayers. We don't want no naysayers on there. If you're not willing to step outside the box and whatever and defend your laws of physics, then it's not going to be beneficial for you or us to join the group, because you're just going to hinder us by telling us that things aren't possible. And as I scroll back up into the chat room and I read the quote that Stephen Gibbons was kind enough to look up for me, that Henry Ford said. Henry Ford had a quote. He says, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So if you think you can't do it, then you're right. You can't do it. But we can, because we believe that we can do it, and we know the physics, and we know the science, and we're going to prove it. It's as simple as that.
Did you know that you can actually take anything that is possible, and make it impossible simply by removing all possibility? Therefore, on the other hand, you can make anything that is impossible completely possible by injecting one minute possibility.
Yeah.
If you can think it. If you can think it, then it can be done.
Well, Stephen Gibbons posted a deal and said, Helmuth Walter, who designed the ME-163, also designed a peroxide power U-boat type, which on decomposition using a catalyst gave out superheated steam to drive a turbine The oxygen formed was used for life support for the crew. The two boats built during World War U-1406 went to America, whilst the Royal Navy took over U-1407, commissioning it as HMS Meteorite. It spent 2 years in experimental service. In the mid-1950s, the Royal Navy built two more peroxide power submarines, HMS Explorer and HMS Excalibur. Like U-1406 and U-1407, they were capable of over 25 knots submerged, but there were too many technical problems for them to be successful, like unstable 95% peroxide. That was a whole big breath, but a lot of good information. Steven, you rock, brother. Man. See? And we ain't got to worry about instability in water, Raymond.
Yep.
Because if we get thirsty, we'll just dip into the fuel tank.
There you go.
And when we're done with the water and get everything we need out of the water, we'll just use the commode and flush the commode back down into the fuel tank through a filtration system.
You know, use it over and over and over again.
Alright. Science says, laws of physics. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
So what happened to the energy you used yesterday?
That's right. It's out there. And so, if I get thirsty and I'm drinking water out of my fuel tank, and suddenly I drank too much water, so I got to get rid of that water, and I deposit it back into my fuel tank through a filtration system, so no impurities get down through there. Mike, can you imagine the implications of this? Check this out, Raymond. I'm driving down the road. I'm heading to Texas, alright? I'm driving down the road. I'm drinking a big giant bladder buster, a giant coffee or something. Alright? You know, after so many miles, that coffee starts to put a gain on you. And I gotta stop and utilize the facilities, otherwise I'm in trouble. Well, just so happens that my fuel tank is running about, you know, a pint or so low.
There you go.
Well, if I have the right technology, and it's, you know, it sounds kind of disgusting, but I'm sure that pilots and astronauts know about the technology I'm basically talking about, where essentially you don't have to get out of the vehicle in order to take care of business, so to speak.
Right.
So I'm tooling right along, and you know, I get rid of the water, and I'm good. I'm just keeping on going. I got fuel in my tank. Drink some more coffee. I'm good. I don't even have to stop, man. Boy, tell me if that ain't ridiculous.
It is cool. You can drive all the way across the United States and never get out of your car.
That's right. Unless you got to take something, unless nature calls you in the other direction, you obviously don't want to pump that down into the fuel tank, so you might have to stop for that emergency. But nonetheless, still one problem solved. We can work on the other later, because maybe you designed that same vehicle to not only run off of water, but run off of methane as well. Who knows?
I mean, I run a 302 Ford pickup truck, 1970 pickup truck. I run that thing off of just about every kind of liquid that will burn that you can imagine, and gas. I run it off propane. I ran it off of methane. I've run it off the fumes of acetone, paint thinner, lacquer thinner. I ran that one truck on so many different things, it was unbelievable. In fact, I think I've said it before on the same program, I ran out of gasoline 3 miles from a service station, and I just happened to have my cutting torch in the back of the truck. Well, I just simply set the gauge at about 3 PSI on the acetylene bottle, took the air breather off, shoved it down in the carburetor, started up the truck, and drove it down to the service station.
Well, there you go, man. So, it's not that we don't have good equipment. It's that we don't run them like they should be run or like they could be run. We don't run them efficiently. And so, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just have to learn how to use the wheel better. I mean, until they put axle grease on it, they figured out that the wheel kept burning itself up after so many miles, you had to put a new wagon wheel on. But somebody said, well, look, this stuff's kind of slippery because I stepped in it with my cowboy boots and I fell on my booty, so let's take and put some of that in there. We'll get an extra mile out of this wagon wheel.
Uh-huh. That's just about how it happens.
Yeah. So there you go, man.
That's just about exactly how it happens. Just pure, somebody just made an accident. They slipped on some cow turd and busted their butt.
Yeah. Not only did they look silly, but they discovered something brilliant.
Yeah.
Look, folks, you're listening to the Mad Science Show. Now, I'm calling Mad Science for nothing because I'm sitting here pointing out things that are blatantly obvious in already existing technology out there. And the only reason why anybody would have any remote doubt to what it is that we're saying is because it's never really been talked about or tried before. Like, who would think about running another engine off of the exhaust fumes of a new engine, all right? It's just like, if you got a catalytic converter on there and it's the catalytic converter is there to burn off waste fuel, then that would tell you that you got fuel coming out the other end. Why couldn't you use that to run another engine? It's a simple question. You know, so try it. If it works, then you just got a twofer, man. You got a twofer one. You can run same amount of gas to run two engines at a time. All right? And if you did this enough times in a row, then by the time you got down to the last engine where it wasn't running as good as the rest of the engine, then you'd know your exhaust is getting really clean because you're not pumping any more flammables at it. You see what I mean?
Yep.
Gosh, it's so simple, it's crazy.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes folks get mad because I simplify things too much, you know? But, yep. If you're talking about...
I'd like to simplify your multiple engines on the same fuel. The most simplified way to do it is to actually vaporize the fuel. If you take 1 gallon of gasoline, put it in a 4 horsepower reconstructed motor on a generator, generating electricity, and using that electricity, putting it under a load, and then you run that thing for about 3-3.5 hours. However, if you took that same gallon of gasoline and turn it into fumes, you could actually run 10 engines for 3.5 hours. And you would get no carbon monoxide.
Well, there you go, man. It's like, it's not, like I said, it ain't the engineering that was the problem. It's not even the modern day, even the old style combustion engines were brilliant pieces of engineering, but nonetheless, at some point down there, they gave up on making them super efficient and just allowed for, you know, hey, it works, don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, if you're talking now that you have a problem such as the pollution that these things are making, and you want to be able to get rid of that pollution, so you put a catalytic converter on there, instead of using that fuel in an efficient manner and reusing that fuel completely until there ain't no more to use, then you just basically are sticking with the same old concept of if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, think about this a minute, should this. My grandfather, he used to set up sawmills. He told me that they ran a one-cylinder Pony engine that ran the entire sawmill on 10 gallons of gasoline a month. 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for a month on 10 gallons of gasoline.
Well, I believe it.
They didn't burn the gasoline. They burned the fumes from the gasoline.
Well, When you're bringing the exhaust out of the first vehicle, one thing you got to remember is that you might have like carbon monoxide in there, which is going to displace oxygen, and so that in itself would keep it from burning. That's why you can't walk up to your exhaust pipe and light a match unless you're running really lean, and it's not going to burst into flames. So what you got to do is raise the amount of air with the exhaust, so where you put a Venturi pipe after the deal, so that when the exhaust is going through the Venturi, it produces a suction on the other side, which sucks in fresh air from the outside. So now you're giving the next engine in line fresh air mixed with the
exhaust.
Yeah.
Yes.
So exactly. you could do this with pieces from the hardware store, from the plumbing department, man.
Yep.
And if you can run two engines for the price of one tank of fuel, you tell me that ain't cool. And I tell you, you ain't paid attention. Well,
when you're down in the forest, then you can't see the forest because of all the trees.
Yep.
But when you're up the mountain and you're looking down, you can't see the trees because there's so much forest.
Well, I step so far outside the box that I'm looking at the big picture from outside, and I'm saying, well, wait a second. I wish I'd have saw this ahead of time. This is a eureka moment, right? And, if you ever want to prove free energy, how much better to prove free energy than to prove that you can use the waste products off of any combustion or burning or whatever? Look, man, I had this happen once. I got a wood stove outside, and I like to burn hedge because hedge is a hot wood. You don't need to burn as much a hedge as you would normally firewood. So you get a better, hotter burn, and as long as you're careful, you don't burn too much. You don't melt through metal. Hedge has got oil in it, so it will literally burn through steel, all right, because it gets too hot. Well, knowing that means I use a tinier log, right? So that's common sense. But either way, I'm burning my firewood, my hedge, I'm burning it through the wintertime, I'm staying warm. Wasn't paying attention to the buildup in the exhaust pipe outside, the chimney, the stove pipe, and creosote built up in there. Unburnt fuel built up inside the stack, and it was all gummy, and it was all like, sticky and black and sooty, and it finally, between the dried soot and ash and the sticky creosote, it basically made a cork in there. So I just happened to be standing out there just in the nick of time to hear this cannon go off when this fuel ignited from the heat. I had flames flying up out of my doggone chimney and ash flying everywhere. Could have been catastrophic had I not been there to notice what was going on. It reminded me that I needed to clean my chimney.
Kind of like a little show on the shoulder there, right?
Yeah. So I cleaned the chimney out and everything functioned just fine. But now I know that there's fuel source being created while I'm burning my firewood. Not to mention that, if you go out there and look hard enough, you'll find out that with wood ash, there's so many different things that you can do with the waste product of firewood burning. You can make a lye soap out of wood ash. You can use wood ash for your doggone garden to add nitrogen to your gardening to help your plants grow better. So that's one of the things when farmers burn off their fields, that's the reason why they're doing that. They don't want to go out there and mush away the ashes. They want to leave those ashes because it helps to fertilize the ground. So that's why they burn their deal off, not just to clear land, but also to fertilize the land as well, using the nitrogen from the ash of burning the weeds and stuff. So, doggone it, man, we've had this technology for so long. It's just putting those pieces of the puzzle in the right deal to get the right picture to give you exactly what you've been asking for all along, which is free energy. Raymond, if I haven't proven free energy by now, I'll eat my doggone hat.
Man, you proved free energy years ago. It's totally proved. The energy is free. There is no such thing as energy that is not free. if the machine that you have to build could check and convert that energy into usable energy. That's all.
Yep. Well, I'm saying we can tap into that free energy utilizing existing technology that could be recycled, repurposed, and basically give everybody out there what they wanted before. Cleaner, renewable, alternative energy that, at the very least, you don't have to manufacture a lot of stuff. I mean, how long would it take to make a little cam that you made out of a piece of, let's say, a quarter inch thick or half inch thick aluminum, and have a deal on there to connect a rod to go down and push a cam or crankshaft around? It wouldn't be hard at all, and it wouldn't be very expensive. You could make it out of junk material. You could build your own cams. You know, you could build your own crankshafts or whatever. And then you can take already existing weed eater motors that, when the carburetor goes bad, people junk them. When the doggone coil system in it goes bad, people junk them. If they can't get it started, there ain't nothing wrong with the two-cylinder motor. It's not cracked. It's not broke. The piston still has compression. The only thing wrong is either the coil or the doggone carburetor got clogged up. You see what I mean?
Yep.
And since we're not going to need the carburetor anymore, it's just a matter of using the coil. You know, replacing the coil or not even using the coil. Fix it up so that it's compression combustion.
Right.
So, there you go, man. That's brilliant. That should give myself a pat on the back for thinking on that one.
If you stand go far away, I'd do it for you.
Oh man, I love this stuff. I love mad science. I love the discussions that come up out of here, because, you know, there's a lot of naysayers out there. Oh well, you know, if that could be done, it'd already be done.
Right. Anything that could possibly be invented has already been invented, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, we made ketchup. Ketchup's one of the best foods in the world. Makes anything bad taste good. But it started off coming out in cans.
Yeah.
Next, they started putting in jars. Well, next thing you know, they put it in plastic jars. And then some guy says, well, you can't do it any more better than that. And then so some idiot decided to put the top on the bottom. Think about that.
Huh. Well, they like a little ketchup packets too, so you forgot those.
Yeah, it did.
But nonetheless, we're not trying to reinvent the engine, because the engine was a good design. We're just trying to re-engineer to run off of any fuel.
Yes, exactly. Michael Fish, operator in 1953, did exactly that. Self-regulating. It would burn on any combustible liquid. You could not mix them. But the thing would run on paint thinner. It would run on lacquer thinner, kerosene, gasoline, coal oil. I mean, it would run on any combustible liquid. And it was self-regulating. You didn't have to do a thing but make sure the tank was empty before you put your new fuel in. And then it patented in 1953. Was actually manufactured, sold, and automobile manufacturers actually bought the thing and put it on brand new automobiles. 1955, there wasn't a single Michael Fish M1 carburetor to be found in the entire world, not even in junkyards.
Well, it seems like every time somebody finds something that's really good, like, for instance, a little tiny example is I found this really cool little nightlight bulb that had a capacitor built into it, and even after you turn the light off, it wouldn't go directly off. It'd stay on for a little bit because the capacitor was charged. And so I wanted to get some more because it was great for alternative energy, for wireless energy transfer. I could wirelessly light this light bulb up, and even after I shut the system off, it'd stay lit. Well, I have searched high and low for those things, and I can't find them anywhere to save my soul. But nonetheless, if I ever find them in like a flea market where somebody like bought some overstock of something that didn't sell, I'm buying up every doggone one I can find. because I can light them up for next to nothing. But it's just a little tiny example that every time something good comes out there and it's too good, it somehow or another gets taken off the shelves.
Right.
You know? Right now, they put so much technology in our hands right now, and if you take these pieces of the puzzle, like those direct drive washing machine motors or a generator head in themselves. Now, can you run your whole entire house off of a washing machine motor? No, not in the way that you're running the current right now. However, if you take that power that you want off of that and store that energy, you can turn that energy back in using inverter-style systems, which are designed to take dirty electricity and make it work for AC current.
Right.
So, yeah, you could.
I've got inverters here. I've got inverters that you put on your battery of your car and run your house off of.
And everybody keeps saying, well, it takes too much energy to get that much out, so it's not going to work. Doggone it, aren't you listening at all? Seriously? Come on, I ain't saying this stuff for my great health here, because, you know, if I stumble onto it, and I do it, and I make it happen, and people get aggravated because I just took money out of their wallet, I could be an endangered species overnight.
Yep.
So, I'm not doing this for my health. I'm doing it for the benefit of the world. I'm pointing out, we've got the technology already available. We can run cars completely off of straight distilled water if they're re-engineered to do so. It's called combustion compression or combustion ignition, whatever you call it. Water is hydrogen and oxygen. And both of them will burn when separated. And if you separate it with the electrolysis process, then you're going to complain about the amperage necessary to do so. And then also we'll have to try to make the water more conductive so that you can get hydrogen and oxygen separation with electrolysis without any additives. It's just a slower process. By making it more conductive, you get it done faster. So you add baking soda to the mix and suddenly you got lots and lots and lots of bubbles. Alright, well, you can also do it with hydrogen, or not hydrogen, hydrogen peroxide. So, there's so many different methods, and by using radio frequencies, you're already rattling the doggone thing apart using its resonant frequency and being able to do it like Stan Myers was doing, or this other character that's talking about selling out to the oil companies or any company that will buy his designs to get him to shut up. That way he'll give him money to go out and research cancer cures, which he's actually wanting to do anyway. And once they buy it up and shelve it, nobody else will be able to use that particular technology, but there ain't no reason why we can't redesign our own version using the knowledge that we've already learned from Stan Myers and him and science in general. The opera singer showed you can shatter glass using the right tones. You got to meet the same tone as the glass, and you can shatter that glass. Now, why can't you do that with water molecule? It's been proven you can. So it's not science fiction, it's science fact. And when you're ready to do so, you'll do it.
I like that because you just need to use that term more often. It's not science fiction, it's science fact.
Yep.
Once you know the facts, then you go on with your life.
Well, truth is truth no matter how you want to look at it. You can call truth a lie all you want, but nonetheless, it's still truth. And so, you know, if you know the truth, you know the basic science, the basic physics, and use the physics for your to your advantage as opposed to your detriment, you'd be surprised what you can come up with. So, I'm sending the word out to everybody out there on the planet. If you really seriously want to resolve the so-called energy crisis, the so-called climate change / global warming / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up, jump over here, talk to Shaziz and Raymond and Thomas and Muddy and everybody in the chat room, Stephen Gibbons and Mike who was in there earlier, and we'll tell you how to do it right. I mean, are we rocket scientists? Not by ourselves, but together, we're better.
I believe that.
Yeah, we make rocket scientists look like preschoolers because we don't just stand there and say, well, the school book said. Who wrote the school book? Could have been an idiot just copying it off of some other idiot. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I know what the school book said. Is the earth flat? Is that earth flat? Is the earth round? I don't know. I ain't been in space, so I haven't been back, stepped back far enough to tell you whether it is or ain't. I could go for observations and science, what I've been told in science, and I got my speculations. I kind of believe it's round. I kind of believe there might be other planets out there, but I can't prove it because I've never been there. But until I get there, I'm not gonna lie to you and say it's either or.
Think about the billions and millions of people and the hundreds of years that they were taught that the earth was flat. Oh, and if you saw any difference, you were an idiot. In fact, you would be locked up in a crazy house.
Well, nowadays, unless you've been to space, you really can't verify unless you have faith in the fact that somebody told you the truth about science. I don't know. I ain't been there. But what I do know is from what I've seen. I know how an internal combustion engine works. I know the basic makeup of water. I know that water can burn. And I know that water is a destructive force that can cut through rocks, steel, whatever. Used properly, water is a tool. It's a fuel. It's food. It's a life-giving substance. It's the most powerful thing on the planet. You think I'm wrong? Ask the folks who's been in a tsunami how powerful water is.
Oh, Lord, Edward.
Ask the folks who's been in a torrential downpour how powerful water is. Ask folks who've been swept downstream during a mild rain to an extreme rain how powerful water is. Ask the Grand Canyon and all the other people out there, or rocks out there, who had been eroded by water. It just doesn't stop. I can point out so many different things. There is a bandsaw out there that uses a high pressure pump that squirts water and will cut a perfect cut on a piece of wood. Look like it just went through a regular bandsaw. Sometimes even better and smoother than a bandsaw because it doesn't have the friction losses that you would with a ripping teeth through wood. It just erodes the material out of the way. See?
They actually cut steel with hydraulic torches.
See? Well, underwater, for years, there have been technicians that take welders underwater. And they weld holes inside of bulkheads of ship while the ship is underwater.
Yep.
Now, water puts out fire. How in the heck could somebody literally be underwater and welding or using a cutting torch underwater?
That is amazing, but they've been doing it for years.
Yeah. Because they paid attention in science class.
Right.
Oh.
Hey,
I need to stop being a jerk, man.
let's let you go ahead and be a jerk. I like it.
Well, you know, and the naysayers out there didn't pay attention to science class, and the NASA groupies, I aggravate them all the two because I'll ask them tough questions, you know, that they don't have the answers for this, so they'll attack you like, oh, you must be stupid because you don't already know. Well, go do your research. You just want somebody else to do your research for them. No, I'm trying to point out the blatantly obvious. Come on, folks. If we've been to the moon in 1969, that's a pretty good technology. If we'd sent a probe all the way to Pluto, took a picture, sent it all the way back through deep, dark space using a generating system that lasted for over 9 years and was capable of producing over 200 watts by the time it got to the other side 9 years later. That's some pretty good technology. we sent a rover to Mars and we got pictures of it and all this kind of stuff. If NASA truly did all that kind of stuff, like science claims and the mainstream media and the government claims, then by God, why are we sitting around here talking about that I'm an idiot for saying that you can burn water in your doggone gas tank, and you got people like stupid mythbusters out there trying to make people look ignorant for doing something that basic science says is already plausible, is already possible, it's proven technology. It's not science fiction, it's science fact. Now, if you're the mythbusters and you're hearing my show, I challenge you. Send a message out. I challenge you. Listen to me, build it, and if you build it to my specifications and it doesn't run off of water, I'll shut up and go away. You ain't got the guts to challenge Shaziz because you know it's possible. You just sold out. You sold out to the mainstream. You sold out to science. You sold out to your brothers and sisters around the globe. You know it's possible. So Shaziz is dropping down the gauntlets to the Mythbusters. If you got the guts, the cojones to back your science, you build it to my specifications, and if it don't work, you can make me eat crow.
Eat crow? I'll kiss their butt in Main Street and give them 3 days to advertise in the newspaper and draw a crowd.
They ain't going to take my challenge. They ain't got no guts.
There's no way they would take your challenge because they know they were wrong.
Yep.
That what they did wrong, they deliberately did it wrong. It comes back to Samuel Clemens, old Mark Twain. He who does not read the newspaper is uninformed. He who reads the newspaper is misinformed. And he who watches Mythbusters and believes their crap is misinformed.
Yep. It's dishonest, it's disinformation, and it's a shame that the kids are growing up and they think Mythbusters are the top dog on the log, and they want to follow their lead, and then they find out later on down in line life when they start looking outside the box that they were deceived. You know, that's why I'm frustrated with NASA. That's why I despise the Mythbusters, is because they're holding back humanity by selling out to the mainstream.
Exactly.
It's as simple as that. That's why I call it mad science. So Mythbusters, if you guys are out there listening to me, then I'll tell you what, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. Let's see if you can come over here with Shaziz and take me to the cleaners. You can't do it. Because intellectually, I've stepped so far out of your realm, you ain't even got a clue. So, am I saying I'm better than you? No, I'm saying I'm smarter than you because I'm not willing to shut my mouth because I want to make more money for everybody else on the planet and not basically follow through with what I said. We got to have clean, renewable, alternative energy because the planet's heating up due to carbon emissions. And the doggone EPA is trying to say carbon is like a toxic waste. Really?
I just caught what you just said. Oh Lord, that is real.
That means you're every time you talk, Raymond, you're spewing out toxicity. You got to hold your breath. And since you're a carbon-based being, you've got to make sure none of your body parts fall off because you pollute the planet. All right, so there you go, folks. That's the Mad Science Show. I threw down the gauntlet to the Mythbusters. You guys ain't got the cojones to come over and challenge the brilliance of Shaziz or his friends and the mad scientists all around the world. You ain't got the cojones to do it right. That's why you do it wrong. That's why the whole world keeps singing this song, Free Energy. What do you think? That's pretty good, wasn't it? Alright, I love Mad Science, and I love all y'all. If you like this podcast, please share it around on your social media networks, and we'll catch you on the Knights of the Round Table if you are interested in joining in. It's as simple as a Skype call. Become a Knight of the Round Table or an honorary knight just for showing up in the chat room. You're listening to www.shazizradio.com, Mad Science. Peace and love. Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.